deal over nuclear weapons. We'll give you more details on that. In other news, the storm Chandra turns fatal with the death of a lorry driver. Andy Ballantyne is LBC's correspondent in the southwest.
After a week of storms, flooding and damage, I'm LBC's Andy Ballantyne in Tynmouth, Devon, where there's another yellow weather warning in place.
Sir Keir Starmer emerges from around an hour and a half with President Xi in China. Prior to the meeting, he said,
China is a vital player on the global stage, and it's vital that we build a more sophisticated relationship.
Which currently seems to come down to the restriction of sale of dinghies, and it's high time to save the high street, or Labour, you'll face an election wipeout. We'll have more on that. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has met the Chinese leader, President Xi Jinping, in Beijing.
I made a promise when we were elected into government that I would make Britain face outward again, because, as we all know, events abroad affect everything that happens back in our home countries, from prices on the supermarket shelves to how secure we feel.
Sir Keir's on a three-day visit to China, the first by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. The trip aims to reset bilateral ties with a focus on trade, national security and green energy. Mr Xi told Sir Keir there have been twists and turns in UK-China relations, but that engagement is unavoidable. In other news this morning, more than 12,000 reports of sexual assault have been recorded in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. Figures exclusively shared with LBC show a 75% increase in allegations since 2020. Professor Jo Phoenix is a criminology expert at the University of Reading. She's told LBC there's been progress in safeguarding over the last few years, but more is needed.
We've got this sexual misconduct policy. We've also got most hospital trusts signing up to, you know, absolute zero tolerance of sexual violence in their hospitals. Great. Marvelous. These are great policies, but they aren't actually doing anything to prevent the actual sexual violence that's happening within hospitals.
The government says healthcare leaders must take robust action to keep staff and patients safe. Iran says its armed forces are ready with their fingers on the trigger to respond to any US aggression. Donald Trump has warned Tehran that time's running out to negotiate a deal on its nuclear program. Water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of £33 a year from April. The 5.4% increase is 2 percentage points above inflation. Water companies say the increase is needed to fund major investment in crumbling infrastructure. And head teachers in England are going to be told to keep more suspended pupils in school rather than send them home. The guidance aims to cut potential unrestricted access to phones and social media. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,154. It closed down 53 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, patchy rain in northern and southwestern areas. Fog will linger for a time in central and eastern areas, with hill snow in the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get sorted with full fibre deals from EE with the UK's best broadband technology.
Really?
Oh yeah, with non-stop browsing, gaming and working made better with full fibre 150, and our most powerful Wi-Fi 7 technology is standard.
But I'm on another contract.
You're covered. We're the only major provider who'll give you up to £300 to switch.
That's a good start to the year.
Offer ends 29th of January.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% UK availability. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven, Thursday the 29th of January. Time is ticking away for Tehran. That's Trump's message, or Trump's warning, with that big, beautiful armada heading their way. Do a deal over nuclear power, or he could unleash it. We'll give you the full details and get your sense of how close we might be ticking down to some kind of conflict between the two nations. In other news, surprise as a Muslim activist who was jailed for plotting an armed terror will stand to be a counsellor in Birmingham in May. It's Shahid Butt.
With the help of Allah,
with your support and with these guys behind me, I know we're going to take this, inshallah.
Surely if you're convicted of that kind of offence, a terror offence, I'm not talking about a parking ticket, you shouldn't be able to apply to be in local government, should you? In other news, a message to central government, it's high time to save the high street.
As the government announces a high street strategy, I'm LBC's Henry Riley on the nearly 2-mile-long Streatham High Road to find out how voters view their local shops.
You remember how the government lauded its new AI training yesterday? How effective was it? Well, we had a toolmaker. Yes, do you remember? My father was a toolmaker. We had a toolmaker go on the AI course, and how exactly did they fare? You'll find out later in the show. And could you spend £75,000 on a bottle of... I bet it does, Brooklyn. Spend it like Beckham. 75,000 quid on a bottle of wine? I know I've bought some expensive wine, but exactly what does it taste like? Stay tuned.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Time to be nervous? There is a question mark there. Well, some experts will help us in a moment. Let's give you the background. As the threat of a US-Iranian war appears to be closer, with Donald Trump warning that time is running out for Tehran and saying a massive and beautiful, it would, wouldn't he, armada is moving quickly towards the region, backed up by, in the total area, 50,000 now, 50,000 US military personnel. Let's go back a little bit. Let's go to a rally in Iowa on Tuesday, in which President Trump referenced the US airstrike on Iran back in June of last year and talked of his beautiful armada.
And in June, we obliterated Iran's nuclear capacity in Operation Midnight Hammer. You saw that. People have been waiting for 22 years to do that, and we were right at the end. They were about a month away from having a nuclear weapon. We had to do it. And by the way, there's another beautiful armada floating beautifully toward Iran right now. So we'll see. I hope they make a deal.
It's not really the Langer Churchill, is it? Just to remind you, the Operation Midnight Hammer, they deployed bunker bombs. Do you remember that? They've used 14 bunker bombs to take out, it's believed, 3 sites which are close to the preparation of nuclear weaponry, just to give you the background on that. And he refers to Operation Midnight Hammer in some social media posts directed to Tehran, talking about that massive armada again. Time is running, I'm quoting directly now, time is running out. It is truly of the essence. Now, his top diplomat, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, appeared in front of a panel of senators yesterday and said the Iranian regime, they believe, is weaker than ever.
So the core challenges, the protests may have ebbed, but they will spark up again in the future, because this regime, unless they are willing to change and or leave, have no way of addressing the legitimate and consistent complaints of the people of Iran, who deserve better.
So we told you what President Trump was saying earlier in the week. What about last night?
We have a big force going toward Iran. I'd rather not see anything happen, but we're watching them very closely. We have an armada. We have a massive fleet heading in that direction, and maybe we won't have to use it. We'll see.
Now, the intervention follows weeks of deadly protests inside Iran. Even the regime there admits to deaths of around 3,000. You may recall we covered this yesterday. It seems it's easily into 7,000 or 8,000, and outside sources are reporting north of 30,000. So what of Iranians themselves? This protester spoke with Sky News.
If the United States and the international world does anything about this, we will be grateful, and we will pray to God that they will be successful.
To help prompt our conversation, let's turn first to Con Coughlan, who is a respected foreign affairs commentator, defence and foreign affairs editor at The Telegraph, and has written for the paper, and I quote, "Now is the time for war with Iran." Con Coughlan joins me now. Hi, Con. Why? Why is it time now? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I've just listened to your introduction there, and, you know, I agree with what Marco Rubio was saying yesterday. The Iranian regime, which is basically a dictatorship, they've stolen every election they've had since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. This regime is on its knees. It's been defeated militarily, not least during the last summer's war with Israel and the US. The economy's collapsed completely. It has no genuine support among the Iranian people. I also devise that there are splits within the higher echelons of the regime. The tensions between the president, who is sort of democratically elected, although he has to be approved by the regime, and the supreme leader have emerged over their treatment of the protesters. So you just feel that, you know, if the Americans, if this big, beautiful armada does actually go into action, it could knock over this regime very, very quickly.
But, Con, with what would it be replaced?
Well, a lot of the money is on the son of the former Shah, Reza Pahlavi, who lives in Washington.
Yeah.
Who many people see as a sort of figure that could do a holding job while the country gets itself back together after nearly 50 years of this Islamic dictatorship.
What is his level of support across the country? Do we have any indication of that?
Well, the problem is with Iran, and particularly now with the internet blackout, it's very difficult to assess this. But, I mean, your question is very pertinent because, you know, we've seen in other countries, you just look at what happened to Iraq after Saddam Hussein went. Countries can just descend into complete civil war. We've seen it in Libya, we're seeing it now in Syria. You know, one has to be aware of this, but my own view is anything's better than what they've got at the moment.
I'm sure most Iranians would agree. So what do we look for to happen next, Con?
Well, this armada is a very significant force, and a lot of the assets, apart from the US aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln, that are now in the Gulf, and this force is ready to go. It's locked and loaded. You know, the fact that they've got all these assets in place suggests to me that something is going to happen, because the demands Trump is making, that basically Iran gives up its entire nuclear program, I just don't think the regime will ever accept that. So,
Con, I will leave it there. Con Coughlin, thank you, Defence and Foreign Affairs Editor at The Telegraph, 11 after 7. Listening, Roger McMillan. Now, Mr. McMillan is a security expert, was head of security at Iran International. That's a Persian language news network based here in London, and joins me now. Thank you for coming on, sir. Can I put to you a question I put to my other contributor? Do we have a sense of what the Iranians actually want? They want, I'm sure, this regime gone, but what do they want in its stead? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I think, as Con said, you know, Reza Pahlavi is potentially the natural successor as a transitional leader.
So like a caretaker manager, effectively, Roger?
As a caretaker manager, absolutely. He's going to be somebody who is potentially there as a symbol of national unity, someone who can perhaps draw together people across Iran, from the left to the right, whoever, reformists, moderates, etc., to try and build some form of political system that the Iranians can get behind. I don't think it's, you know, whether it's him as the future leader, that's for the people of Iran to decide, but it's in the transitional period that's essential.
Roger, can you give me a sense of how regular Iranians are thinking about Donald Trump? Because it was some weeks ago that he urged them to keep fighting, help is on its way, but he later backtracked, which is not a great message when people are dying in their thousands.
Yeah, and you know, as you said earlier, the numbers are very difficult to get hold of, but you know, some people are saying up to 30, 40,000 people, 350,000 people have been injured and arrested, etc. People look to Donald Trump for the hope. And yes, they gave the red line of the protesters and then the executions. And this is what they now hope. They now hope finally that he is there. You know, they have the armadas. They have the buildup of troops for part of Operation Agile Spartan, the exercise, CENTCOM exercise in the region. They're looking now for some action to take place. Whether or not this spurs people to come back to the streets to you know, have more protests is one thing. However, we've got to look to the regime will fall from the top. If the regime falls from the top, and you will see the chasms appear, the defections appear, then the regime will collapse. But the question then, as you said earlier correctly, is what happens on day one?
Yes.
Somebody has to be there to put the lights, keep the lights on, keep the system going. and get, you know, food back on the table for the Iranian people.
Lastly, let's finish a question about UK involvement, if I can, Roger. Overnight, France has indicated that it will prescribe or ban the IRGC, the European Union saying it is likely to follow suit. That would make the United Kingdom the only nation of any stature, really, that has not prescribed the IRGC. A word on that, if you would.
I think the prescription of the IRGC is a very very complicated subject, because the IRGC is not just a military organization. It is, you know, huge economic power within country and, of course, diplomatic too. So really, if we prescribe the IRGC, it potentially precludes us from engaging with the diplomats for the future, which we'll need to do on day one. Perhaps we need to look at prescription of certain more offensive organizations such as the Quds Force within that network.
Grateful for your time. Roger McMillan, security expert, former head of security at Iran International. Thank you for that. And now over to you. Two aspects, really. Let's pick up on the last of my three questions there to Roger McMillan. Surely it is now time, and I get the complexity of it, but if the United Kingdom is effectively the only nation on the planet with any heft not to ban the IRGC, as France indicates it will, surely we need to do something about that. And then there's just a general sense of, it's looking difficult to see how Trump will back down. It's highly unlikely that the mullahs are going to back down. So what happens next? In other news, after about 1.5 hours together, Sir Keir Starmer concluded his bilateral, as it's called, his meeting with President Xi, who said,
"For the sake of world peace and stability, or for our two countries' economies and people's livelihoods, it is imperative for us to strengthen dialogue and cooperation."
Plus, back here, you remember this ban on Labour MPs.
Get out of my pub!
Well, now it could be extended to other hospitality areas.
I'm Tom Sklanders. I own Wild and Ginger Cafe in Bournemouth with my wife, and I'll be speaking to Nick about why we banned Labour MPs from our business.
Yes, now it's cafes as well as the ban grows. You wonder where they will be able to go. It's 7:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has told President Xi Jinping he wants to build a more sophisticated relationship between the UK and China. An LBC investigation has found more than 12,000 reports of sexual assault have been recorded in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of £33 a year from April. LBC weather, fog gradually clearing to leave a mostly cloudy day, patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Shepherd's Bush, the Uxbridge Road remains closed both ways at Shepherd's Bush Green because of an ongoing police investigation. Also, problems in Buckhurst Hill. Brook Road is partially blocked at the Epping New Road following an accident. Also, very busy on the M25, anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel. And the A1M's very busy again this morning, southbound to Junction 7 at Stevenage. On the train, southeastern services are running between Hastings and Tunbridge Wells. Those overnight works are still taking place. Also, southern trains remain suspended between Horsham and Dorking. There's a replacement bus service running instead. And District and Piccadilly Line trains aren't stopping eastbound at Barron's Court Station for the engineering works.
This is LBC.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over 1 million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look. That one's the plough.
Shooting star. Oh, wow.
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked-up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Process check 26 of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 19 minutes after 7. Let's come to your action in a moment as that armada, the big beautiful armada, continues to get closer to Iran. And of course the military personnel, US military personnel is increased. Meanwhile the UK I think will probably be an outlier within the next day or so. France indicating last night the European Union likely to follow that they will prescribe, they will ban effectively the IRGC, Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. Front page news for many of the papers this morning, these events. The Daily Mail, a very snappy and punchy headline, Countdown to Conflagration. Equally punchy, really, for the Daily Mirror, Trump's war threat to Iran. Front page also of The Guardian, time is running out. Trump says as US armada heads towards Iran. And it's on the front page of The Eye, nuclear ultimatum, abandoned weapons program or massive armada will bomb Iran. US threatens Ayatollah. Let's take one other front page of stories that are being done. The Daily Express focuses on Kemi Badenoch. She gave a speech yesterday in which she said she's really calling for party unity and telling people that if they want to join reform, which has sort of been quite a rash of those folk of late, that they should get gone. There's a headline. Kemi, my party is for serious people, not drama queens. Quite how you would interpret that if you were thinking of leaving the Conservatives to go to reform, to be likened to a drama queen. Only you will know. But let's get to our conversation concerning Iran. Paris is in Stanmore. What action does the UK need to take here, do you think? Paris, good morning.
Hi, Nick. Thank you for having me on. First time caller.
Oh, how lovely. How long have you been listening to the show, Paris?
Oh, yes, yes.
Great to have you on.
Instantly,
thank you.
Since the COVID and the lockdown. Yeah. But this is really, really key, and it's very important, especially today. Mm-hmm. Of all days, the IRGC is proscribed as a terrorist organisation.
Yep.
We have been protesting outside the embassy, outside the consulate, outside...
Oh, have you gone to the protests, Paris?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. Why do you feel this so keenly?
This is absolutely key because this is what will bring the regime down to its knees without actually having to attack Iran and having to have a war. Unfortunately, this has been going on for 15 years now. King Reza Pahlavi actually requested and submitted a request to have the IRGC proscribed 15 years ago. This has taken 15 years now.
Why do you think, for people who are not as familiar with it, and I commend you for all your efforts and your enthusiasm in this, why do you think something such as banning or prescribing the IRGC, you said, will bring it down? What, explain to the listeners how that would happen.
Because it will make it illegal, really, for the foreign countries to continue dealing and taking money from the regime. And also, once the regime falls, it will stop the government officials coming out and requesting asylum and bringing the money that they have been actually channeling out of Iran into illegal businesses. They actually fund most of the terrorist organizations like Hamas, like Hezbollah, like all the Shia militias that are around the Middle East. And also now the sleeper cells here, you yourself admitted that the police have actually got 1,000 terrorists that are potentially active in the UK. So we aren't even safe here.
And when you look at the UK response, you're living in a country that is about the only one not to prescribe what about it. How embarrassing, how annoying is that for
you? Very embarrassing. It is absolutely embarrassing. And it only goes to show that the government is actually taking a lot of money as backhander and investments into things that, you know, we don't even know. The mosque in Maida Vale is actually the head offices of Ali Khamenei, and he does a lot of his money laundering through the Shia mosque that is in Kilburn. And there has been lots of demonstrations there and lots of conflicts. Okay. And And so I'm going on as well.
Paris, thank you for the background there. We need to do a quick factual check on what you've just said, so I hasten to add, if anyone's listening from that organisation and wants to challenge it, please, you'll come straight to the top of the queue. Meanwhile, one of my colleagues will backtrack. But Paris, I'm grateful for your input. Thank you. I can understand why you feel it so keenly, and we'll have more reactions on that in just a minute. Just coming up on 7:24, let's come back to events in the UK. And sadly, Storm Chandra has turned deadly. It's reported that a lorry driver believed to be in his 60s died after crashing into a river in Hampshire. This as the Environment Agency warns the storm could bring more flooding, fields turned into lakes, and of course now the problem, or the threat, of ice. So it's back to OBC's Southwest correspondent Andy Ballantyne joining us from Tynmouth in Devon, where the large sinkhole has suddenly appeared. Andy, morning.
Good morning. Yeah, the sea's getting angry again as a new wall of rain is expected around 1 p.m. As much as 25 millimetres could fall later on already saturated ground. We're under another yellow rain weather warning for the southwest. Thousands have flocked to the seaside here at Tynmouth and Dawlish to see the damage for themselves caused by recent storms.
The amount of debris and the rocks that have been moved are just incredible, and I can't understand how strong the sea is.
Play park down there for the kids. I hope they fix it up quick.
And the damage that's been done to the beach huts, it's just very sad. But the power of the sea.
The main rail line to London has now reopened, you'll be glad to hear, after emergency repairs were carried out overnight when a huge sinkhole appeared. The seawall breached once again, but not as bad as 2014 when train tracks were left dangling in midair. Tynmouth's Grand Pier is the heart of the coastal town and is loved by tourists and locals alike. Partly destroyed and swept away, bits found miles down the coast. It could cost millions to repair the uninsured structure. Robert Phipps owns two kiosks at either end of the promenade. This time he's finding it hard to pick up the pieces.
The till systems, the ice cream machines, the coffee machines, it's all thousands of pounds to replace. All businesses are struggling, especially seaside businesses. It's hard economic times at the moment, and the future is very uncertain for us.
Hundreds of trees down, roads damaged beyond repair, and communities cut off, and we're not out of the woods yet. Everywhere just feels damp and cold. We're so over it down here now after a week of this. Rain, please go away and come back some other day. I'm off for a cup of tea and to warm up.
The great Ballantyne, Andy Ballantyne, LBC's Southwest correspondent. A rather damp Andy Ballantyne reporting there. 7:26. This comes as unbelievably an Environment Agency is reminding people, quote, do not drive through flood water. It's often deeper than it looks. Well, with the state of our roads, at the very least, you're going to go down a pothole, possibly ping your tyre, burst your tyre, destroy your wheel or whatever. And possibly then you're going to have a flat tyre and you're in the middle of a small lake. At the very best. At the worst, you could drive in half of a sinkhole. I mean, for the love of all that's holy, that is not something, surely, that you would want to do. 7:27, let's come to your reactions on social media and on the text as regarding UK and Iran, well, UK, US and Iran. Just to tell you what we told you at the top, there's an enormous armada, a beautiful armada, to use the words of President Trump, heading on its way down. It involves aircraft carriers. Aircraft that can carry those bunker busters. You may recall, of course, the success, as President Trump hailed in June of last year, of Operation Midnight Hammer, which took out three sites where it was believed Iran was getting to provide nuclear weaponry. 14 bunker bombs were used on three different sites. And, of course, that was June of last year, which is, what, a little over 6 months. And it was hailed then as, quote, a great success by President Trump. Well, if it's a great success, why have we got to go back? Unless, of course, they've identified other sites. This is what you're saying. First of Mike in Crawley, will this be a war of the election polls? The regime in Iran is criminally and casually indifferent to casualties among its own people. Therefore, simply bombing them might not achieve regime change. The regime in America is based on those who support Trump, to whom their leader has vowed not to get involved in foreign wars. This begs the question, when the body bags start coming back, which administration will blink first, the despotic or the wannabe despotic? And just before I move on, that does also raise the question of exactly what you replace it with. If you get rid of the current regime, as we were saying earlier, if you get rid of the current regime, with what are you going to replace it? You only have to look at recent military exercises and operations in countries such as Iraq or Afghanistan that have not really ended the way that anyone would have desired. And is that going to happen again? So you can understand that as the Iranians reportedly could be thinking, Iranian people could be reportedly going back to do more demonstrations, what are you going to replace it with? Do you have the king, Reza Pahlavi, as a sort of caretaker manager, as discussed earlier? Let's go back to what you're saying, though. We're talking also about the fact that the United Kingdom seems to be the only country of stature or of considerable note that is not banning the IRGC when you allow that all European countries, save for France, which indicated last night that it will, in support of the US operation ban, as will the European Union. Lee says, we are the only country. It makes me ashamed of our government. Same story, Mohammed in Twickenham. Iranian people didn't lose thousands of lives, so Trump can make a beautiful deal. The Islamic states of the Ayatollah must end. They don't represent us or our values or anything Iranian. They are, I think, says Mohammed, a terrorist mafia group who have been terrorizing the entire region. We have Prince Reza Pahlavi as our transitional leader ready to step in. All right, do keep them coming. And coming up after the news, around this time yesterday, we were talking about that ban on Labour MPs going into pubs, but it is to be extended. Chair of the Nighttime Industries Association, Sasha Lord, told me yesterday,
it's not going to go away. This ban is going to continue, and we're going to extend it for coffee bars, for restaurants, for hotels, and they will have to come back to the table.
And that extension has already taken place, and we'll have a report on that. Plus,
his father was a toolmaker, but how useful are the Prime Minister's new online AI training programmes for the toolmaking industry? I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the answer.
And how much? What's the most you've ever splashed out on a bottle of Plonk? Have you ever spent it like Beckham? Hopefully it didn't give him a headache. £75,000 for a bottle of Chateau d'Yquem, if I'm saying that correctly. But what exactly does that wine taste like? You'll find out later in the show. It's 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has told China's president it's vital the UK and China build a more sophisticated relationship. Sir Keir stressed the economic benefits of an improved partnership during a meeting with Xi Jinping in Beijing. More than 12,000 reports of sexual assault have been recorded in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. Figures exclusively shared with LBC show a 75% increase in allegations since 2020. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of £33 a year from April. Water companies say the increase is needed to fund major investment in crumbling infrastructure. LBC weather, fog gradually clearing, then a mostly cloudy day, patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
We heard from hundreds of pub owners who had their heads in their hands at the changes which would have left them without a business to run, without a pint to pour. But the government has come back for another try, announcing a wider review of business rates. Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, Dan Tomlinson.
Listening to your show over recent weeks and hearing from the publicans who've been coming on, you and your programme on LBC does vital work in surfacing these issues.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Hi Derek, Tara from Flash Designs here. Hope you're well. Not sure if you've seen my emails from last month, but could you please pay my invoice? Thank you so much. Bye. Hi, it's Tara, Flash Designs. Did you get my last voicemail? I know you're busy, but please pay my invoice today, if possible. Hello, again. It's Tara, again. Politely nudging, again.
Still chasing unpaid invoices? Let Sage Copilot help do the chasing so you can get paid up to 7 days faster. Search Sage Accountant today.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34 into the world of finance and commerce, joined by Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Breaking news, and I fear it could be more jobs going in the banking sector. Christian, what is it? Morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. This is the story that never seems to quite slip away. It's the story of bank branch closures. In the last few minutes, Nick, we've heard from Santander, a big player on the high street, yeah. Spanish-based banking giant, said that they will shut another 44 of their bank branches. Now, that puts just under 300 jobs at risk. They announced about 95 branch closures last year. That in itself hit around 700 workers. The bank says that, look, 96% of all of our transactions are now completed via digital channels. And they also insist that they will continue to operate out of supermarket branches and community hubs. And one thing which I have noticed, and I have used, is increasingly the Santander cafes, which is, you know, pretty good cafes. I have to say, the one in the square mile that I've popped into, where you can also then do a bit of banking. So they say that all they're doing is recognizing how the world is changing. But it is a story that goes on and on. And thousands of bank branches have closed in recent years. I think NatWest and Barclays have been the biggest offenders, if that's how you want to put it. And every time, you know, there are various concerns from people who talk about vulnerable groups or elderly people or decline of the high street. But the banks themselves say, look, this is how the world is changing and we have to respond to that. But Santander today announcing another few dozen closures of their physical branches.
I'm amazed at you because you like that, because I was in Kensington High Street last year and I went into it. I have an account with Santander and I went in and I said, I need to see someone. They said, you can see someone in about 30 minutes. Would you like a cup of coffee now? And I said, surely you're getting this the wrong way round. Why can't I see? I don't get to Costa Coffee and Starbucks and says, right, can I talk to you about your mortgage? But you like it. You think it works, Christian. You're a younger man than I suppose that's what it all comes down to.
Yeah, I suppose it suited me at the time. You know, convenient, right opposite my office. I didn't go in early in the morning. In fact, I did go in early in the morning, and they said if I were you, I'd come back in an hour
when the coffee's ready. The barista hasn't arrived. Right, let's go to the water industry. What's happening in that, Christian?
Yes. Well, bills, Nick. Water bills in England and Wales will rise, we understand now, by an average of about £35 in April. That is the latest above inflation increase. The water companies, God bless them, say they need all this money to fix their leaking pipes and upgrade their various treatment facilities. I'm sure our listeners in the Tunbridge Wells region will be paying close attention. It means that the average annual water bill got up to about £640. The highest average bill will be about £760. That's for Southern Water customers, the highest average bill there. Just as a side note, point out that Southern Water also receives the highest number of complaints from its customers. But the regulator Ofwat told companies that they could increase their bills by a very chunky amount over a five-year period. Many water bills surged by £100 or so last year at the start of that period where, like, the brakes were taken off, and now we get the latest cash increase on the bills. And the water companies say that we need this, and the rest of us are just going to have to soak it up.
Never normally out of the headlines for long, and he's in again. Elon Musk, what's he up to now? Elon?
Well, there's a huge flurry of major tech companies reporting their end-of-year earnings yesterday in the US, something which has been driving US markets into fever pitch ever higher. Amongst them was Tesla, and it was interesting for a number of reasons. I mean, it was interesting because you got some numbers on how the company's performing. Actually, its revenue was down a little bit, boo-hoo, to $94 billion. Yeah. And that's because of some competition for the electric vehicle market, not least from China, and the end of some federal tax breaks. In the 3 months to the end of December, it had revenue of $25 billion, still doing very, very well. Shares are actually up, fair enough. Not least because Elon Musk started to talk not just about the numbers, but about the plan. And he says the plan is to spend more than $20 billion of cash this year, increasing its product lines, increasing its factories to build batteries, robots, and AI chips. And it says, Elon Musk says, that they need to be autonomous. So they don't just mean autonomous in terms of the vehicles they want to produce, but he said global supply chains are vulnerable. He says he thinks people are being naive about geopolitical risk, and if there was major disruption to critical minerals and chips, that would hit them hard. So they're going to go all in on trying to build as much of that for themselves as they can. And what do they want to build? Optimus humanoid robots, robo-taxi vehicles that operate without human drivers. That's where he says the future is. And analysts and investors quite liked the sound of it last night.
Lastly, why is there a woke-up call for the Bank of England?
We have been taking
should
a look...
I should have written your headline today, Christian. I should have written your headline.
Yeah, you've got my number now. You can just ping your headlines across to me. We've taken a look at the Bank of England contract for printing money, which, as you can imagine, is a fairly chunky, nearly £1 billion contract, which has been put out to tender. And we've discovered that applicants for that aren't just required to explain how much they do it for and when they deliver the money. No. They have to also explain or make sure that they actually hit some pretty stringent ESG, environmental, social and governance targets around equality and diversity and sustainability and carbon reduction. What the heck has all that got to do with printing money, you might ask? Well, the bank is not required by law to impose those sorts of requirements on people who are competing for the contract, but it has chosen to do so. And some people might say, fair enough, we've got a bit of power to wield, they can use it for good. And other people, many of whom we spoke to for this story, have said this is just going to completely distort the pricing mechanisms, it's going to completely distort people's ability to compete fairly, and it's going to make the whole thing much more inefficient. So yes, there is now a conversation about woke banknotes at the Bank of England.
Thanks for that, Christian. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, 7:40. Back to more of your reactions as that, quote, big, beautiful armada cruises closer to Iran and that region, but we come to events back home, and we come to events including or involving Labour MPs. You remember this ban?
Get out of my pub!
From the late, great Barbara Windsor as Peggy Mitchell from EastEnders, and now it is to be extended to, it would appear, cafes as well, as was indicated yesterday. So let's turn to Tom Sklanders, who's owner of Wild and Ginger Cafe in Bournemouth, who joins me now. Good to have you on. Can I call you Tom? Is that all right, sport?
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, please do, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Tell us a little bit about Wild and Ginger, how long you've been there, and how business is. I think you run it with, is it, you run it with your partner?
Yeah, it's my wife's business, really, but I'm involved right. heavily. It's a bakery cafe, so we do really good coffee, but everything's made from scratch, so really high quality ingredients. We try and keep our prices fair.
Brilliant. And how long you had it, and how's business?
So we're in our third year now. So fortunately, we didn't have to go through COVID ourselves. But business is really good, actually. I'd say we're a really vibrant, successful cafe. Lots of customers. Business is growing year on year. But the taxation system just makes it really hard to succeed and actually make money. So I feel for cafes across the country, really, with the level of VAT and then the business rates.
Just break that down. I don't want to know the amount of income that you take, but in percentage terms, what the Chancellor did, again, I'm not expecting the details of your bank account, but what did it mean to you and your wife's business?
I can share numbers. So following the most recent budget, yeah. What we were hoping for, I mean, what the industry needs is a reduction in the yeah. VAT rate, because we're up to 20% straight across the government of our takings.
Yeah.
And what that means is it's really hard with the other costs that are going up. So wages, payroll costs going up,
But the cost of coffee as well, and milk, and just about everything else.
Yeah, food inflation, the cost of goods is going up. So all of that squeezes the profit margins. The reality last year for my wife and I is my wife was able to pay herself about £5 an hour.
Good Lord.
From a successful we're a successful cafe, busy cafe. We pay six or seven part-time staff slightly above minimum wage. And the business rates implications following the budget were that we are exposed to additional £4,000 in business rates. So whilst my wife was able to pay herself £15,000, say, that's just another £4,000 we need to find before we're able to pay ourselves. I don't take any.
So in an associated trade, the pub trade, they came up with the idea, and it seems to have had effect, to get out of my pub. They banned Labour MPs. I understand you're about to, or you've done the same with your wife.
Oh, we did that before Christmas, yeah, Nick. So the campaign actually started in Southbourne, where we are. James Fowler, who's a great man, good friend of ours, has done a lot for the local area. He banned Labour MPs from his restaurant. Incidentally, he won't receive any support because it's just pubs.
Right.
So we started this, and the idea really was to it's quite a newsworthy thing to do, try and make a campaign to help the government, make the government listen, create some pressure. That really worked. So within a day, primarily because of the reaction of our local MP, who did a video outside of the Lard House asking the community to call it out because he was being excluded and felt upset about it. This was never personal against Tom. What we're saying is policy needs looking at. It was on Good Morning the next day and the front page of The Sun within 2 days, and it just went nationwide really quickly and did create that pressure. And that's
so what is it you're looking for, and that's why we did it. As a cafe owner with your wife, what is it you're looking for now, Tom?
So, well, the business rates has been addressed for pubs and music venues, but not the rest of hospitality. So we would want some measures to help cafes, restaurants, hotels are really badly hit with the business rates. And also, we've had the opportunity to engage with across many political parties. We had the opportunity to speak to Daisy Cooper before the Lib Dems before the budget. We explained the pressures. We said, really, the rate of BAT is much higher in the UK than Europe. She said she couldn't make any promises that she hadn't costed, but then she went away and obviously costed it up. Within a couple of weeks, she was announcing a Lib Dem policy to reduce VAT for hospitality to 15%. That would be a really good step in the right direction. But actually, across Europe, the average VAT rate is 13%. In France, Italy, Spain, it's 10%. In Germany, it's 7%. Ireland are reducing it from 13.5% to 9% in July because they recognise that it's really hard with the cost pressures to actually make profit, and VAT is the biggest issue. You've got Tom Kerridge in the press saying we needed like that front end reduction. That's really what we'd ask the government to look at.
I will end it there, Tom. Stay in touch. Let us know how you get on. It's the Wild and Ginger Cafe in Bournemouth. Tom Sklanders is the owner with his wife, calling really just for parity with other European countries, which doesn't really seem to rock the world that much, does it? Meanwhile, elsewhere, after about 2 hours ago, after a meeting lasting around an hour and a half with President Xi, Sir Keir Starmer said,
China is a vital player on the global stage, and it's vital that we build a more sophisticated relationship.
And we'll pick up on one detail of that after this. It's 7:46, LBC News headlines then, read by Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer has told President Xi Jinping it's vital the UK and China build a more sophisticated relationship. Figures seen by LBC show more than 12,000 sexual assault allegations have been made in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average £33 a year from April. LBC weather, fog gradually clearing, then a mostly cloudy day. Patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Today's on the M11 southbound to Junction 7 at Harlow. There's been an accident and one lane is closed. Also problems on the A13 eastbound at Canning Town. One lane's just been closed and that's because a van has broken down. In Shepherd's Bush, the Uxbridge Road remains closed in both directions at Shepherd's Bush Green because of the ongoing police investigation. On the train, South Eastern are now running between Hastings and Tunbridge Wells, but with delays of around half an hour. And also South Eastern are delayed at London Bridge. It's because of a signal failure. Some services are having to be diverted to Charing Cross or Victoria instead. And still no southern trains between Horsham and Dorking.
This is LBC.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders! Book clubbers, are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer, all in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Selling your car can be super simple. If you choose We Buy Any Car, because they sort out any outstanding finance for you. Just bring along your final settlement agreement. If only they could make parallel parking simpler.
To the right a bit, mate. Yeah, back. Back a bit. Bit more. Oh, no, too far.
We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Process check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Idle money chills in your current account, parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, Busy Money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 9 minutes before 8. We'll come back to our conversation. Two conversations, really, concerning the banning there. Some MPs from that cafe in Bournemouth and others up and down the country and, of course, events in Iran. But away from Iran, let's get to China. As I say, around 2 hours ago, roughly, what's called a bilateral, a meeting between the two men, Sir Keir Starmer and President Xi, broke up. Around an hour and a half they had together. So what's coming out of it? Well, obviously very early days, but we might get an indication now from Minister for Border Security and Asylum and Labour MP, Alex Norris. Good to have you on, and I understand you getting some sense of what you hope has been achieved or will be achieved from that summit involving our Prime Minister. Morning, Minister, what are you hearing?
Morning, Nick. Yes, I think, you know, it's clear that these have been very important and very successful bilateral discussions overnight. you know, I've been on the programme before talking about small boat crossings, and yes, I know the listeners, how keen they are to see those tackled. Well, 60% of crossings last year had engines that were Chinese-made at their heart, and we're striking an agreement as we speak with the Security and Intelligence Services of China to work with ours to disrupt that flow. So a very important step through on a very important issue. There's also important discussions going on about visa-free travel, about reductions of tariffs on whiskey, so some very important discussions that are crystallising over the course of the next few hours.
You say disrupt that flow of engines. How is it to be disrupted, Minister?
Well, I have to be a little bit careful on how it works operationally, Nick, because obviously those
we don't want to let the bad guys in, but just sense.
Well, yes, yeah, so, I mean, the way I think perhaps for listeners to think about it is, you know, similar to cooperation agreements we have with other countries, if we know where parts are originating, and we can put that together with where they might be going next, we can work with whatever the legislation is in any individual country to see what may or may not be an offence within that. It helps us build up an intelligence picture around who is using these parts, how they're moving them, and that helps us disrupt them. And if we do those disruptions, it makes it more expensive, it makes it less reliable, it makes it a bad business model. So a bad day for the traffickers, which makes it a good day for us.
But if we were to look to the problem, say, in a different area, Minister, with gun crime, we know that a majority of guns are made in the United States of America, but it doesn't stop them being smuggled into the country. Why might this be a different business model, a different model, Minister?
Well, it's different because, you know, these are parts that flow, you know, in this case originating in China, but then go to other countries along the journey, whether in Europe or Asia, for assembly. You know, we know where they have to get to, which is the final couple of miles in northern France. So at any point of that journey, whether it's assembly, whether it's that final arrival, we can, working with local authorities, work out where they are, if there are offences committed, have those operations disrupted and stop it happening. So, you know, that really rich sense, but that can only happen if we've got really good cooperation and participation at every leg of that journey with local enforcement. And that's why we're so pleased that China wants to work with us to do that, to tackle that problem.
So that's obviously what success looks like for you and your colleagues. More broadly, the Prime Minister is there in total for 3 days with a lot of businessmen and women. More broadly, can you give us an indication what other areas of success we might enjoy from the trip?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, you'll have seen from the delegation, there's people from across all sorts of industries. You know, we want to tackle the cost of living in this country. Doing that is by putting Britain in the strongest trading position. So I've mentioned there a little bit about some of the progress being made on tariffs on whiskey, a little bit around on some of the challenges around visas to make it easier for our people, if they want to go to China to set up a business or develop their business, to get out there as well. So very important cooperation there too. So there's lots going on. I mean, we're still in the kind of early stages following that bilateral meeting, but those details will be coming out over the course of the next couple of days.
Can you confirm whether the Prime Minister mentioned the case of Jimmy Lai or the treatment of Uyghur Muslims in his conversations with President Xi, Minister?
Yes, he mentioned that both of those were discussed and raised very seriously with President Xi. They are very, very important. You know, we believe that the purpose of having a relationship where for the first time a Prime Minister can go to China, first time in 8 years, is so you can have that conversation round the table and raise those cases directly at the highest level.
Do you think we're closer to action in both those cases by the Chinese, obviously? Do you sense that there's some kind of ground has been made up?
Well, I wasn't in the room I'd want to be a bit cautious there. But what I want to be very clear to listeners is, you know, whether it's the repression of the Uyghurs, whether it's the case of British Lai, a British national in his 70s who we want to see released from prison, we are raising that at every opportunity at the very highest level because we want to see that change.
All right. You are the government minister this morning. Can you give us an indication of the level of UK support for the beautiful armada, to quote President Trump, that's heading towards Iran?
Well, we, of course, want peace and stability in the Middle East. We want, as you'll have heard the Prime Minister say following his meeting earlier, we don't want Iran to have access to nuclear weapons. We ourselves, you know, I won't comment on the operational military details of another country, but for our part in it, we are using all our diplomatic levers. We've summoned the ambassador to raise our concerns around human rights issues. We're working to protect British nationals, of course. We've also brought in, since we took office, more than 200 sanctions against people in Iran that we have concerns about, to make sure that we are driving that positive activity to make sure there is peace and stability in Iran and across the Middle East.
And as it's indicated in France last night that they will look to proscribe or ban the IRGC, and the European Union likely to follow suit, that would leave the UK effectively as an outlier. Why? Why are we not looking to ban that terror group?
Well, Nick, you know, you will know that I won't comment on individual decisions because they're based on national security information, some of which in the public domain, some of which isn't. But you will also know that there is a gap in our terrorism legislation that means we can't prescribe state organisations at this point. That was a recommendation that came from our independent review into our terror legislation.
Doesn't that need to be reviewed, Minister?
Indeed, and we've made that commitment that we're going to make that change. But as I say, I can't comment on an individual case, but we are looking to change that gap in our legislation. But
you would seek to ban it if you could?
Well, I wouldn't want to make an individual comment on the IRGC, but what you do know is we have brought in multiple hundreds of different sanctions on people related to the IRGC to restrict their activity as it relates to Britain.
Finally, on the subject of bans, you're probably aware your favourite hostelry in Nottingham North or Kimberley could be one that is banning Labour MPs. I'm not saying it is. But you could now also face a ban from coffee shops and restaurants and, if you need to use them, hotels in your patch as well due to some of the financial measures. Your reaction to this growing ban from those in the hospitality sector, Minister?
Well, I'm optimistic my local boozers won't want to ban me because I'm one of their best customers. I've no use, I have to say, for a hotel and less perhaps use for a coffee shop than I want to admit on your show. But in all seriousness, we know that businesses want support to help tackle rising costs. That's why we've brought in significant changes to help pubs in recent days. But what I would say is, and what I say to businesses locally, it is about the government helping to reduce costs, but it's also about making sure people have more money in their pockets. Right. So they've got money to spend locally, and wages are up more in the last year than the previous 10 under the last government. That's what's going to help business in this country.
Grateful for your time. Enjoy the next pint you have at the local. Minister for Border Security and Asylum, Alex Norris, appearing here on LBC 2 minutes before 8. Let's get one call in. I've only got time for one. Malcolm in Bodmin has been hanging on a long time. This is about the cafe ban. Apologies to the other callers. I don't think I'll get you. Malcolm, your view on this ban, right or wrong? Good morning.
Nick, wrong. I've got every sympathy for everybody who pays any kind of tax rates or anything. But Nick, these are the facts, right? For 2020, 2021 and part of 2022, business has got a 100% discount. They paid no rates, right, Nick?
Mm-hmm.
Then 23, 24, 75% discount, Nick. And then in the last year or so, 40% discount, Nick, right?
Yep.
Now, Nick, but I ask this question, Nick, okay? From
Malcolm.
2020, Nick, right?
Mm.
Anything, any increase is huge because there were no rates, Nick. Now,
Malcolm, we heard from a cafe owner in Bournemouth, and the owner pays herself $15,000 a year, which I know that's a tiny sum, but to own the cafe, to have all the responsibility, to have all the stresses, and to earn $15,000, it's not great, Malcolm.
Nick, look, the problem is this, Nick, right? Rates have to be paid because if rates aren't paid, other sources of income for government have to be sought. Nick, I'd ask you to do this homework, Nick, right, for tomorrow's show.
Briefly, go on. Yes, I will. I'll write it down. Go
Nick,
quickly.
Ask businesses how much they were paying pre-2020 and how much they're going to be paying now under the revised rates, Nick. That's your homework.
All right, so thank you for that. And next time we bring in the conversation, I will take a look at it. Thank you. I'm just finishing writing it down. Thanks for that. The music means we must move on. OK, Putting Right, coming up after the news. Putting Right, some broken china.
It was a real strengthening of the relationship, and that's in the national interest because, of course, there are huge opportunities here in China. It's the second biggest economy in the world.
But what does it mean for you and the idea of those Chinese outboard motors and other engines? Will it actually have effect? Plus, how can a convicted terrorist stand in local elections? And spend it. Like Beckham, or at least Brooklyn, who spent £75,000 on one bottle of wine. What's it taste like? It's after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Keir Starmer has told China's president he wants the UK to have a more sophisticated relationship with the country. They've held talks in Beijing during the first full day of the Prime Minister's trip. President Xi said ties with the UK had gone through twists and turns that didn't serve either country's interests. Keir told reporters that concerns around China's record on human rights were also raised during discussions.
Part of the rationale for engagement is to make sure that we can both seize the opportunities that are available, which is what we've done. But that, if you like, is part and parcel of the reason to engage. It is in our national interest, it gives us great opportunities, but it also gives us the opportunity to have those discussions about areas where we disagree.
The UK and China are expected to sign off on a border security pact aimed at disrupting the supply of small boat engines. The Border Security Minister Alex Norris has just spoken to Nick. He says the deal will help disrupt and dismantle people smuggling gangs.
If we know where parts are originating and we can put that together with where they might be going next, it helps us build up an intelligence picture around who is using these parts, how they're moving them, and that helps us disrupt them. And if we do those disruptions, it makes it more expensive, it makes it less reliable, it makes it a bad business model. So a bad day for the traffickers, which makes it a good day for us.
More than 12,000 sexual assault allegations have been made in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. Figures exclusively seen by LBC show a 75% increase in reports since 2020. The government says health leaders must take robust action to keep staff and patients safe. Water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average £33 a year from April. The 5.4% increase is 2 percentage points above inflation. Water companies say the increase is needed to fund major investment in crumbling infrastructure. Schools in England are going to be told not to automatically send pupils home when they're suspended for bad behaviour. Ministers say the new move aims to limit the amount of learning young people miss and cut unrestricted access to social media. And Santander has just announced it's to close another 44 branches. It puts almost 300 jobs at risk. The bank says 96% of all transactions are now being done digitally. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,154. It closed down at 53 yesterday. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather. Fog will gradually clear to leave a mostly cloudy day, but patchy rain and hill snow will linger for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico, or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives, or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after eight on Thursday, January the 29th. Coming up in this hour, putting right that broken China, as I said earlier. But what does success actually look like? And what about this deal involving the manufacture of Chinese engines or Chinese motors that are used to power these small craft across the channel? Will that make a difference? Plus, as I said earlier, high time to save the high street.
As the government announces a high street strategy, I'm LBC's Henry Riley on the nearly 2-mile-long Streatham High Road to find out how voters view their local shops.
Plus, am I the only one, and normally I am, who thinks this is crazy, a Muslim activist who was jailed for plotting armed terror will now stand as a Birmingham councillor in local elections. I speak of Shahid Butt.
With the help of Allah, with your support, and with these guys behind me, I know we're going to take this, inshallah.
Surely if you're convicted of that kind of offence, I say again, not like a parking ticket or even a speeding fine for that matter, a terror offence, should you really be allowed to stand as a councillor? Plus, you remember around this time yesterday, just over 24 hours ago, the government was lauding its new AI scheme. So I thought, how can we test if it's actually any good for tradesmen and others?
My dad was a toolmaker.
My dad was a toolmaker.
My dad, he was a toolmaker.
My dad was a toolmaker.
And your dad, I think it's right to say, was a toolmaker?
He was a toolmaker, yeah.
Well, there's only one way to find out. We found a toolmaker and had them take the AI test. And what were their findings and their view? You'll find it later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Travel 5,000 miles to Beijing to meet with President Xi in the quite old eye of considerable controversy. And at the moment, what have we got out of it? Well, we're going to try and track the manufacture of Chinese outboard motors. which are responsible for 60% of the crossings of those small craft. That currently is all that's emerging. Now, I say again, that meeting broke up around 2.5 hours ago. It went on for about an hour and a half. I'm sure, well, I hope that God more emerges than that. They've gone all that way just to talk about rubber dinghies. But here we are speaking after the meeting. They're called bilaterals, by the way, in the world of international diplomacy. They love that expression. I'm having a bilateral. I have a series of bilaterals. Honestly, you go to one of these, as I have done. They get so... I have bilaterals all this afternoon. Anyway, after a bilateral, Prime Minister Keir Starmer said...
China stands ready to develop with the UK a long-term and consistent, comprehensive strategic partnership. It will benefit our two peoples and the wider world.
China is a vital player on the global stage, and it's vital that we build a more sophisticated relationship.
Following in Sir Keir's wake is the press pack, he told them.
It was a real strengthening of the relationship, and that's in the national interest because, of course, there are huge opportunities here in China. It's the second biggest economy in the world, and that's why we've got such a big business delegation. A lot of the discussion was about how we open up access for those opportunities, focusing, as I always do, on how is this going to be delivered back in the United Kingdom, how does it benefit people back at home. And we made some really good progress on tariffs for whiskey, on visa-free travel to China, and on information exchange and cooperation on irregular migration, focusing particularly on small boats and engine parts.
Hang on. Whiskey and engine parts. 5,000 miles. That must be more. Now, much as I asked one of his senior colleagues in the first hour, he was asked by reporters if he'd raised the issue with President Xi, such as the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai, imprisoned in Hong Kong, and the treatment of Uyghur Muslims. Sakir?
Well, we raised those issues, as you would expect. Part of the rationale for engagement is to make sure that we can both seize the opportunities that are available, which is what we've done. Yes, we did have a respectful discussion about that, raised those issues, as you would expect. But that, if you like, is part and parcel of the reason to engage. It is in our national interest, it gives us great opportunities, but it also gives us the opportunity to have those discussions about areas where we disagree.
And lastly, we're already being presented as a success from this summit is this small boats deal, these engine parts. More detail here from Minister for Borders and Asylum, Alex Norris.
If we know where parts are originating and we can put that together with where they might be going next, it helps us build up an intelligence picture around who is using these parts, how they're moving them, and that helps us disrupt them. And if we do those disruptions, it makes it more expensive, it makes it less reliable, it makes it a bad business model. So a bad day for the traffickers, which makes it a good day for us.
Conservative MP Tom Tugendhat was Minister for Security. He's also one of five MPs to be sanctioned by China, and he joins me now. Well, so far it seems to be, Mr. Tugendhat, whiskey and engine parts. Your reaction to what we're hearing so far? Good morning.
Well, frankly, that's pretty thin, isn't it? I mean, look, the reality is the visas agreement is they've promised to look at it. I mean, sure, okay. I suspect they were looking at it anyway. And the engine parts, it's nothing to do... Well, it's not nothing to do with China, but it's not China that's the important bit. It's the trafficking points. And those trafficking points are in Europe and in Turkey. And cooperation between us and the Turks and us and the Germans, and it used to be the French, but the French have actually been pretty good on this recently, and others in making sure that these parts are not assembled or collected in neighbouring states is what's really important. If they're not made in China, they'll be made somewhere else. So that's not the most important bit. So I'm afraid what they've done is they've agreed an intelligence sharing operation with an organisation that spends most of its time beating up its own citizens, repressing its own minorities, and in fact spreading that repression and that violence, sometimes even to the UK, as we saw outside the Consulate General in Manchester. So I tell you what, doing intelligence sharing with the Chinese is something I refused to do because I simply did not believe that they would give us accurate information. They have consistently lied to us on so many other things. Why should I trust them on this?
I have heard you on this and I have read your comments on this. To those who say, but you're only going to proceed, you're only going to make a relationship if you go and meet with these people, if you talk about Jimmy Lai, if you talk about Uyghur Muslims, you have to get there to make, to stare them in the eyes. How do you respond, Mr. Tugendhat?
Well, look, I love the idea that Keir Starmer, or in fact any other British politician, is such a diplomatic wizard that simply turning up in Beijing is going to turn an incredibly hostile, repressive communist regime into the bastion of light, liberty and engagement that is going to profit the UK hugely for the next 100 years. But I'm afraid it's complete rubbish. That is massively over-exaggerating what any British Prime Minister is capable of doing. It's also completely failing to understand what China's interests are. And I'm afraid that's one of the things that we keep forgetting in this conversation. What does China want? China doesn't give a monkeys about the small boats. They don't give a monkeys about the British economy. What they care about is control at home and control abroad. And that's what they're prosecuting, and that's what they're getting.
I know you have a meeting to attend, so I will finish there. Thank you, Tom Tugendhats, Conservative MP and former security minister as recently as 2024. Now, just bring another commentator in before we come to your comments. And it's worth hearing on the subject of trade. This is the trade surplus in goods. I stress in goods. The trade surplus for China is $1.2 trillion US dollars. For the United Kingdom, we run a trade deficit in goods, right, not services, of $6.1 billion. That's the tail of the tape for these two great nations. So let's bring Elizabeth Brough, who's a foreign policy expert, senior fellow with the Atlantic Council, and author of Goodbye Globalisation, into the conversation. Right or wrong for Sakir to pitch up and meet President Xi? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. By the way, you and I are having a bilateral now, right?
We are very well done. Friends. We're having a lovely bilateral, Elizabeth. I love it. Yeah, go on.
Right or wrong, it's a sign of desperation. So I remember vividly 10 years ago when it was very trendy to try to increase trade with China. And I think we all remember David Cameron's meeting in the pub, or rather him bringing Xi Jinping to a pub and trying to create as warm relations as possible
with
China.
Fish and chips and a pint of beer, I think it was, Elizabeth, yes.
Yes, then business, UK businesses, other Western businesses and Western governments realizing that China is not quite the partner that we were hoping it would be. It is a significant trading partner, but it's also a trading partner that does things its own way to its benefit, not to the benefit of not on fair terms. It doesn't play fair. And then came the realization that geopolitics is only going to play a bigger role, and that it would be unadvisable to be as exposed or as dependent on China as we were back in 2015, 2016, 2017. And we tried to reduce trade with China. Companies tried to pivot to reduce exposure to China, to do more business with other countries. And we tried to build closer trading relations with countries that were, our friends, or at least not our adversaries. And then came the Trump shock, which is what we are experiencing now, right, that America is not the friend we thought it was either. And so this leaves Keir Starmer in this position where he now goes to China and hopes for more trade.
Well, so we see what's in it for the UK, trade, and I mentioned those eye-watering trade figures that China enjoys. What's in it for President Xi?
It is such a vindication for him and for the rest of the Chinese government that there's no way around us. You thought you could pivot to other trading partners. You thought you had a strong Western family. Well, you don't. And clearly, it doesn't matter that much to Xi Jinping and the rest of the Chinese government and the Chinese business sector, whether privately owned or government owned, although most of it is obviously connected to the government. It doesn't matter that much to them whether they do a lot of business with UK, but it does matter from a diplomatic standpoint that Keir Starmer has now arrived and essentially asked for closer relations.
Elizabeth Brough, thank you. Our bilateral concludes. Your foreign policy expert, senior fellow with the Atlantic Council. You wrote Goodbye Globalisation. Well, we'll look at that global side, and we will come back to matters here in the UK. And the warning after research by University of Southampton, that the Labour government will, and I quote, be washed away in a tide of discontent unless it takes action to save your high street. Even in the relatively affluent area of Blackheath, where I live, we now have boarded up shops in tiny little Blackheath village, and I would imagine probably up and down the country And there is a few quid in Blackheath, I assure you. Even I was in Richmond. My God, there's some money in Richmond. There's boarded up shops in Richmond. LBC's reporter Henry Riley went to the, I think it's the second longest high street in the whole of the United Kingdom, Streatham High Road. This is what some people on Streatham High Road said about the state of their high street.
I think it's quite polluted. Probably that puts a lot of people off because of all the traffic and the buses. I don't think the shops are as good as they used to be, but at least they've got good supermarkets and things.
So how low has your high street sunk? That's after the 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's president in Beijing. The border security minister has just told Nick the UK and China are expected to sign off on a new border security pact aimed at disrupting the supply of small boat engines. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average £33 a year from April. LBC weather. Fog gradually clearing to leave a mostly cloudy day. Patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 24 at Potter's Bar. It's because of an accident and traffic is being held. The M11's very slow. Southbound to junction 7 at Harlow. There's been an accident and one lane is closed for recovery. In Shepherd's Bush, the Uxbridge Road remains closed in both directions and that's because of an ongoing police investigation. On the trains, there are now delays of about 45 minutes for southeastern services between Hastings and Tunbridge. The overnight works finish late. Southeastern also disrupted at London Bridge because of a signal failure. Some trains having to go to Charing Cross or Victoria instead. And southern trains aren't running still between Horsham and Dorking.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy, how's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it, don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders,
surfers, gamers, bikers,
hang gliders!
Book clubbers, are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer, all in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up on what you're saying about the Prime Minister's trip to China. Obviously, it's difficult to get into great detail. We haven't got a lot of detail to tell you. I mean, if you're in the whiskey trade, it might have helped you a little bit. And we're going to try and clamp down on engine parts. This is what you're saying on that aspect. Paul in Kingston, typical Labour. I could buy 100 outboards today, have them in France by the weekend. That wet words have nothing to do with cracking down on the gangs. It's pathetic. Paul adds, it's reform for me. Mark in Lee Green in South East London is equally unimpressed. Poppycock, he says, you might as well say we'll never let it rain again. The only answer is to let the army go over and pop the boats before they enter the water. If it starts a war with the French, so be it. Ooh, well, I'm pretty much on your same page there, but I don't know if I quite go as far as that one. This comes from Jim Walker in North Devon. Lots of claims of things being given by China during Sir Keir Starmer's bilateral meeting, according to the minister, but what did we give in return? Same subject, this comes in. I think a lot of you are waiting to, indeed, as John says, the devil will be in the detail of this summit with China, but there's quite a lot of devil in China as well. That man, I assume you mean Jimmy Lai, that man has to be freed, and the way they treat some of the workers is appalling, as your Conservative MP just outlined, the MP being Tom Tugendhat, Conservative MP for Tunbridge and Mauling down in Kent. Now, taking a different kind of mauling is our High Street, also spelt differently, by the way. I am aware of that because I used to live near West Mauling. But a mauling of a different sort, as it is revealed that unless the government does something about it, according to research by the University of Southampton, it will be washed away in a tide of discontent, researchers' words, not mine, because it must tackle the decline of the High Street, Britain's High Streets. The feeling is that people feel High Streets have declined more than any... Does this chime with you? Research saying that High Streets have declined more than any other part of their local area over the past 10 years, as household brands collapsed and shoplifting or shop theft rose. I was talking to somebody yesterday about a part of Kent that some of you will know, some of you won't. It's called Gravesend. I haven't been to Gravesend in over a decade, and to put it politely, it looked a little tired then. I'm told apparently now it's basically all just charity shops now and boarded up shops. And I mentioned briefly the place in which I live, Blackheath, which, again, there's a few quid around Blackheath, I'm not going to lie. You've got boarded-up shops there and charity shops, and I was in Richmond the weekend before last, and that really is a wealthy area. It's where Rupert Murdoch used to live, for God's sake, and one of them Rolling Stones. So they've definitely got a few quid, and you've got boarded-up shops there, on Richmond High Street, for the love of all that's holy. So what is happening, and what are people saying? Well, we managed to find the second-longest high street in the UK, which obviously begs the question... And I would have thought my colleague might have put it on the brief. Where is the longest high street? But before I give you that bombshell, let's go to the second longest high street. This is like Alan Partridge interviewing France's second fastest racing driver. We go to the second longest high street in the UK, Streatham High Road down in South London, and LBC's Henry Riley pounding the beat. Morning, Henry.
Morning, Nick. I'm deleting that line about the longest high street from my copy now. Buried within the government's announcement on business rates for pubs earlier this week was a promise to focus on people's high streets, something which is a top priority for voters. A recent YouGov poll found people's shopping precincts was the third most important local issue behind local healthcare and reducing crime. That, coupled with research by the University of Southampton that you've mentioned, which found people feel their high streets have declined more than any other part of their local area over the past decade, could spell trouble electorally for this Labour government. And it was on Tuesday that we had this announcement from Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson.
So today I'm announcing that later in the year the government will bring forward a high street strategy to reinvigorate our communities. We will work with businesses and representative bodies to bring this strategy together. It will be a cross-government strategy, and we will be looking at what more government can do to support our high streets.
Now, voters see their high streets as being symbolic of whether their area is prospering, according to this research. And the state of the high street, an issue very much for Labour MPs, who are increasingly alarmed by it. There's been analysis by the Guardian newspaper that found there are now 8,000 fewer retail outlets in 2025 compared with 6 years previous in 2019. Restaurants, vape shops and discount stores are among the winners. But the losers include opticians, department stores, florists, clothing shops, and even nightclubs, which have continued to disappear. Similarly, over the last 6 years, there's been a 17% rise in the number of hairdressers and barbershops, and there are 2,500 fewer cash machines on the high street. So I've come, as you mentioned, to the second of the UK's longest high streets, nearly 2 miles long, the Streatham High Road in South London. It has independent coffee shops, gift shops, restaurants, and also 17 barber shops. What do residents make of it?
I think it's quite polluted. Probably that puts a lot of people off because of all the traffic and the buses. I don't think the shops are as good as they used to be, but at least they've got good supermarkets and things. And years ago, when I grew up here, there used to be a John Lewis in the high street, and then there was a lot of other similar shops there. If there's a presence of a larger store like that, it attracts other better sort of shops and things.
It could do with an upgrade.
Yeah?
Yeah. We've got a lot of new shops that have opened further down the high road.
Okay.
This bit, There's not a lot here.
There's so many buses what can take you like to Brixton, then you can get to London.
Are there any shops you use though? Do you use, I mean, there's like local cafes?
Yeah, I'm going now, Tesco's, yeah.
And you've got a big trolley as well?
Yeah.
So you're doing your big shop?
Yes, darling. Right. I've been here like 27 years down the road.
I think actually, it's probably actually a little bit improved. I've only been here a year. I'd say it's slightly better. Like, rubbish isn't as bad, but still needs a bit of improvement, yeah.
What would you like to see that's not here already?
Less vape shops, less betting shops, a few more things for the family to do, and just a bit of a nicer atmosphere, really.
Do you think there's been a decline in the high street then, overall?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've just got to look at the business rates that these firms are being charged and everything, and it's very hard for these businesses to make any money, so...
Folks speaking with me earlier on Streatham High Road. Nick, the state of people's high streets will again be one of those issues high up on voters' minds when millions go to the polls for the local elections in May.
Henry Riley, before you go, where is the country's longest high street?
Southend, unless I've got my sums horribly wrong.
You're absolutely right. 2,983 metres. So how long is Streatham High Road in metres?
Whoa. In metres, you wouldn't want to know that. You'd want it in kilometres or miles for ease, wouldn't you?
Henry Riley reporting on the nation's second longest high street. Let's pick up on your calls. Laz in Walthamstow, you're on the radio. Morning, Laz.
How you doing, Nick? You all right?
I'm good. How's Walthamstow High Street?
It's all right. It's just dying slowly, to put it bluntly, but other than that, things are well.
When you say it's dying, tell me what you're seeing on the high street, or more importantly, what are you not seeing on the high street?
Well, I mean, so there's been a lot of changes. So, you know, your mum and dad's shops have been forced out. You know, rent's gone up and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But it's a deeper problem. A lot of people sort of point towards the changes in, you know, 2012, Olympics, and obviously with the rent. Coincidentally, COVID, people stay at home. But in my opinion, having lived there for, you know, more than 20 years, pretty much all my life, I think it was a much deeper problem than that. You know, the model in and of itself, retail shopping essentially has been dying, you know. It's been down. People don't want to shop there, but it once used to be a lifeblood, you know, of a community. You've got blue listed shop stores there. We've got a Pylon, the Eating Pie House there that people used to go to Sundays after church. It's now a sushi bar. Lots and lots of changes. My first ever, you know, part time job when I was at uni was there at Lidl. So there's been lots of changes. It's important. However, I think it's just needing of sort of dire funding. That's the main problem.
How much would you miss it if the decline continues? And if we listen, if we listen to the research, people actually might vote against Labour because of the decline in the high street, because it feels within the locality such a miss, such a loss.
I say we'd definitely miss it because there's no mistaking, you know, high streets not only signify where one's at, it's almost a good place from a geographical standpoint, but also it's a hub for community, you know, whether it's the local pub or, as I mentioned, the various stores that, you know, help for the family, for the locals. High streets are very important, and it's sort of almost a sense, you feel a sense of proudness because it's what you know, whether it's from the McDonald's on the street, or high street to the corner shops, you know people, you buy off people, you know, it's very much community-led and community-part. So to see them die, not just Walthamstow, you know, Leighton High Streets, across the board, yeah, it's not a really good thing, you know, it's a sad of bad time, so to speak.
You're right. All the boarded up shops. Laz, have a good one. Darren, you work in an associated business, and we'll take your call if you can hold the other side of the news when we can give you a better run at it. A couple of notes coming in on the idea of this going after Chinese engine parts for these engines that bring the boats across the English Channel. Andrew says the people smuggling gangs must be quaking in their boots at this new attempt to smash the gangs. There are so many sources of engines and parts throughout the world, this will make no difference at all. Michael in Newcastle is equally unimpressed. Does Starmer think the British public are daft? Australia stopped the boats not by targeting engine parts, but by turning the boats around and not letting anyone in. That does seem rather logical. Should this person be allowed in as a local councillor?
With the help of Allah, with your support, and with these guys behind me, I know we're going to take this, inshallah.
A Muslim activist jailed for plotting armed terror, Shahid Butt, will stand as a councillor in Birmingham in May. I'll be arguing that if you're convicted of an offence of that level, Surely you shouldn't be able to run for office. It's 8:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's president in Beijing. The Prime Minister told Xi Jinping that he wants a more sophisticated relationship with his country. The UK and China are expected to sign off on a border security pact aimed at disrupting the supply of small boat engines. The border security minister, Alex Norris, has told Nick it'll help disrupt and dismantle people smuggling gangs. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of 5.4% from April. That equates to an extra £33 a year for the average household. LBC weather, fog gradually clearing, then a mostly cloudy day. Patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
What does Kemi Badenoch mean when she's telling centrists to get out of her way? Are they not welcome in her Conservative Party? And what on earth is Trump's armada doing off the coast of Iran?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
Psst, hey dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Okay, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
We're doing pretty muddy.
It's an obstacle course.
There's one for kids.
Runners.
Walkers.
Book clubbers.
Knit clubbers.
Tenpin bowlers.
Choir singers.
Lake swimmers.
Gardeners.
Whether you climb it.
Slide it.
Or crawl it.
Go all in against cancer.
All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up now.
And save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming up after I speak with Darren, is there a crime upon which your conviction means you would be excluded from standing for some kind of a government office, local government office, or indeed central government office for that matter, a high level of crime involving a terror offence? We'll explore that in a moment. 8:34. Darren is in Portsmouth. Darren, tell me about your story on the high streets. You work on them, is that right? How do you do that?
Morning, Nick. Actually, I'm a local developer on the high streets on the south coast.
Right.
And we try and take empty, unused high street buildings, make the retail areas smaller, and create accommodation for young working professionals on the upper floors.
How busy are you?
We're really busy. I mean, the amount of property that we're being offered is ridiculous. We can't buy everything, as I'm sure everyone appreciates. Mm. But what we're actually seeing is, I think we're seeing a problem with local planning. Maybe people don't like to see change on their high street. I think that's a concern. And I also think we're seeing developer contributions on the high street actually stopping development on the high street, which I just find in this day and age is unbelievable, really.
Where will the high street be in 5 or 10 years' time, in your view, Darren?
I think we could see a real mix of empty shops, vape shops, coffee
barbers.
Shops.
Which
I don't,
a lot of barbers, as
yeah,
well.
A lot of barbers, a lot of vape shops. Yeah, I mean, my local high street where our business is actually based, I think we've now got something like 7 barbers in a high street. My concern here is...
Can I ask you something, Darren? And yes. I'm sure you're not involved, but there can't be enough people to have their hair cut. There's got to be something going on with these barbers, surely.
I think unofficially, I think a lot of us know that.
Right.
And I think there has to be a clampdown from the government on this, because I actually think local authorities need to look at what actual shops they want in their high street and maybe stipulate how many of those shops can be in a high street.
How many barbers? You mean you can have,
yes,
you know, one barber for every half a mile or something like that? I don't know what it, you know, the ratio doesn't matter.
Exactly, yeah. I think we've got to look at, I mean, I love a high street. I think it's going to be sad that our next generation of kids may not be able to experience the high streets like kids did in the 70s and 80s. And I think a high street is a hub of the community. And I think until we actually embrace the high street, I think we'll sadly see it decline. And I don't think that is the answer.
Well, that's interesting you talk. Just for listeners who are obviously younger, indeed most of my production team, what was the high street like in the 80s?
Well, I think it was the hub of the community. My parents used to drag me down the high street on a Saturday morning to go and get their food and the veg and the meat from the butchers and meet different people in their local community and have a chat as you're walking past. And I also think back in the day, they then kept an eye on the older generation who obviously maybe needed to be checked on. And I think those days have gone. And I think our community asset as a high street is disappearing. But I do see green shoots, though. Like, for instance, we've just worked in somewhere in Gosport High Street in Hampshire, and we've just opened up a McDonald's on the high street.
Okay. Well, that's good. Lastly, I sense I'm a little bit older than you. It was such that I remember one Christmas, I did all my Christmas shopping for my wife, my mother and father and my two brothers. I could do it all on our local high street. That was the offering of the high street in the old days.
And I think you're right, and I remember those days as well. And I think what we're looking at now, a high street is not a luxury. A high street is an essential for your day-to-day stuff. And I think if we embrace that, and the local government, local authorities and the government embraces it, but I think it needs to be a joint effort from everybody to get back to our high streets how we want them.
Darren, good luck with the business. May you continue to do well and employ all those people. Thanks, Darren. 8:38. Let's go to other matters. This is a headline that grabs your attention. Convicted terrorist ready to stand as Gaza candidate. Muslim activist Shahid Butt was jailed for plotting armed terror, will stand as a Birmingham councillor this May. Here he is speaking in a video posted to social media about why he wants to be successful in his quest to be a councillor.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you all. My name is Shahid Butt, and I am going to be standing for the upcoming local councillor election as an independent candidate representing the Sparkhill ward. I joined forces with the Independent Candidate Alliance, and inshallah, together we want to bring about change to our community. And for me, especially Sparkhill, this is a place where I grew up. I have a lot of history. It's something that is very close to my heart. We have fantastic people that live here in Sparkhill. Unfortunately, they have not been looked after. The area has not been looked after. And I want to try and change all of that. And with your support and with your help, I believe that I can achieve that.
Now, Mr. Butt was convicted by a court in Yemen in 1999 after prosecutors said he was part of a militant group planning attacks on a series of Western targets, including the British consulate in Aden, an Anglican church, and a Swiss-owned hotel. So a crime of that severity. I appreciate we're going back more than a quarter of a century, actually, upon conviction anyway. Should you be able to run as a local councillor? I would suggest not, but Ajmal Masroor, who's an imam and broadcaster in London, joins me now. It's been a while since we spoke. I trust all is well, and best wishes to you and your family. I think you and I are not on the same page here, Ajmal. Tell me why. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It is true we have not seen each other for a long time. We should see each other more often.
We should, sir. We should.
Absolutely. And you know, we have both aged, sadly, and I don't like to say that. But you look
younger than ever. You have an age today, my friend. You have an age today.
You look younger than before, for sure. And your voice is always reverberating across our front room, which is scary, because I tell my children, stop it. But anyway, let's get back to the story.
Yes, sir. Why am I wrong and why are you right, Ajmal?
I didn't say you're wrong. I said we just differ. I differ in the sense that, look, we have at least five or six convicted criminal sitting in House of Lords even now. Mm-hmm. They've served their time. And once a person has served their time in our legal system, it allows them rehabilitation. It allows them normality back in society. Of course, with some checks and balances, with some, we should have something to make sure that they don't commit the same crime again. So whether it is Shahid Butt or Jeffrey Archer, I don't really care. What I care about is being consistent with our law. Our law says they can. Until we change the law, we can't be screaming and shouting, saying they cannot. Of course, we have an opinion.
Yes, and Lord Archer, of course, was a crime for which he was convicted, was not on the same as a terror offence, Ajmal.
I agree, and I'm saying offence are all subjected to the scrutiny of the courts. And if the courts have decided to give him a particular sentence and he has served them and he has been freed in the society, he can run a business, he can have a family, he can get about, do everything that he's normally doing in society. There is no restriction. Why should there be a restriction, especially if he says and if society feels that he has rehabilitated himself and he hasn't committed again the same crime?
Because I would argue, and I absolutely respect your position, but I would say if you get to the level of offence, not so much money, and I'm not seeking to demean the severity of that for a moment, but you get to the level of offence that might have involved murder, manslaughter, sexual crimes of a certain nature, or terror, that to me means that you've actually excluded yourself from running for office.
You know, interesting you should say that. When somebody murders, when somebody commits crimes such as the one you've listed, Islamic law is that they will have been killed by now. They would not be living because capital punishment is applicable in the Islamic legal system. But we don't live in an Islamic world. However, in the liberal world in which we live today, in the modern world we have people who live. They live either in jail or they live in freedom. If they live in jail, then they're restricted. They're deprived of their liberty. Same thing as you and I enjoy, but they're deprived of it. But when they're freed, the liberal society's philosophy is they've served their time. If they've served their time, they should be allowed to rehabilitate themselves in society as long as they fulfill certain criteria. So, for example, when I stood for the parliamentary election in Bethnal Green and Stepney in the last election as independent candidate, I didn't have a criminal conviction of any nature. I've not done anything wrong against anyone. If there was, I would have stood down, but I didn't. I nearly won. Nick, you would have been calling me an MP, but because 1,000 votes... 1,000
So who is your local MP then? Who
Mushnara Ali.
Ah, okay, right. Okay.
I gave her a run for her money.
You really did? My God, you came...
1,000 votes away. And that's my point. In our democracy, it's so beautiful, people can choose. So Shahid Bhatt or anybody else can put out their shop and people can say, get lost, or they can vote for it.
But lastly, and I'm sure he's genuineness, he talks about wanting to bring unity and to unite the people of Sparkle. Can someone who's been convicted of a terror offence, is he the person to bring unity?
You have to ask the people. They have the power, ultimately. Vote is a very powerful tool, and I saw it with my own eyes. Going to the polling booth, being there in the election day for counts. You know, Nick, when the counts were being done ward by ward in every single sector of my constituency, and it was neck and neck and neck and neck all the way, I saw Rushnara crying in the corner. I said, that's called power of votes. Yeah. That's called power of democracy. And in one ward, she had 1,000 votes extra. And I said to my team, we have lost. But again, having the humility to accept that you have won or lost, because people have the ultimate choice, is what democracy is about. And I celebrate it, and I'd like to congratulate people of Birmingham if they are going to make their vote. Please make it wisely, make it cleverly, and make it such that counts.
And lastly, coming so close, Ajmal, has that increased your thirst for more, or that's it, I had a tilt and I'm not going back?
I'm only 54, come on, Nick.
You'll have another go.
Nigel Farage tried it 7 times, didn't he? And at the age of old age of 70, I don't know his age, forgive me if I got it wrong, but he has become an MP. I'm only 54, I've got a lot of life in me. My children say to me, Daddy, carry on, one day you will get there, and when I do, I'll come and do a show with you.
It's a deal, and we'll bill you as the Muslim answer to Nigel Farage. How does that sound,
Ajmal? No, please don't do that. I don't like Nigel Farage, too, for sure. Just say Muslim answer to democracy in the UK.
You got yourself a booking. Look after yourself. Best wishes to your family. Thank you. The great Ajmal Masroor, Imam broadcaster in London, who came within 1,000 votes of being an MP, so near and yet so far. Calls coming in on this. Ian, you will be the first caller. Also, we're going to other high streets. I think we might be off to Dover High Street as well. And also, after the news, now, help me, what was Sakir's dad again?
My dad was a toolmaker.
My dad was a toolmaker.
My dad, he... was a toolmaker.
My dad was a toolmaker.
And your dad, I think it's right to say, was a toolmaker?
He was a toolmaker, yeah.
So as Labour put forward yesterday this great AI initiative, how you can upgrade your skills using AI in whatever trade, profession, job you are, guess what? Well, we had a look through the eyes of a toolmaker in Essex, and what did they make of it? You'll find out after this. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Prime Minister Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's president in Beijing. Figures seen by LBC show more than 12,000 sexual assault allegations have been made in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. And the average water bill in England and Wales will increase by around £33 a year from April. LBC weather, fog gradually clearing, then a mostly cloudy day, patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic was being held on the M25 anti-clockwise just by Junction 24 at Potters Bar. It's open now, but the delays all the way back to Junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. Also delays on the M11 southbound to Junction 7 at Harlow, and that's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Very busy on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section. A lorry's broken down, only one lane is open, and it's slow for about 3 miles on the approach. In Shepherd's Bush, the Uxbridge Road remains closed both ways at Shepherd's Bush Green. It's because of an ongoing police investigation, and it's very busy in the area. On the train, South Eastern are now delayed by about 45 minutes between Hastings and Tunbridge Wells, and also South Eastern trains are disrupted at London Bridge.
LBC. What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young? Simply living young. And with a new SEAT Ibiza, you can roll young with a £2,000 SEAT contribution. Or the new SEAT Arona with a £3,000 SEAT contribution. Both at 6.9% APR representative. SEAT. Rolling young. With Solutions PCP, ordered by 31st of March 2026. Indemnities may be required. SEAT Finance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd buy a really nice suit.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I'm rich!
But instead of a suit, you buy a jetpack. And ruin your sister's wedding.
So sorry, I'm going to the land!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen? Stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine. Let's talk about this idea. I really enjoyed my conversation with Ajmal Masri. What a smart bloke. I'm going to say, what a loss, actually, to Parliament. I don't want to be rude about Roshanara Ali, but I think he would have been a breath of fresh air, wouldn't he? Anyway, he'll probably be back at it in 3.5 years. Ian, in Newtown, you're on the radio, which, of course, is in Northern Ireland. You're going to tell me some salient facts on this conversation, aren't you? Morning, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I just find it incredible
perverse and obscene that people who have been convicted of terrorist offences can even be considered for public office here in Northern Ireland.
Well, I was going to say, what's the situation? I'm afraid I'm not familiar, and I should be. I think you've got some councillors, haven't you, as I recall?
Oh, well, we have Sinn Féin in power within the Assembly at Stormont, but we also have them in power in all the local councils, and Sinn Féin themselves, there's a proliferation of convicted terrorists within the ranks who hold public office. And the one example I would give you would be Gerry Kelly, who sat as the chairman of the PSNI Policing Board. He's a convicted bomber. He was convicted for bombing the Old Bailey in London.
Right.
He was involved in the mass outbreak of by the IRA prisoners, where prison officer Ferris was murdered during that outbreak. And somebody to be holding public office, like I just find it obscene.
Question.
I was brought up by parents that told me, don't get into trouble, stay out of trouble. If you ever get a criminal conviction, that could affect you the rest of your life.
You and me both.
And you have a situation where people want to apply for jobs. If they have a conviction, police record done by prospective employees, and they find out you have a conviction for dishonesty, that could debar you from having a job. Yet it doesn't seem to debar you from standing for public office.
To those who would say, and Ian, by the way, my parents told me exactly the same thing, if you get a conviction, it's going to dog you for the rest of your life, or jeopardise your chances. To those who would say, but what Ian needs to realise is the reason that you've enjoyed peace for however many years you have is because you have this arrangement where these people can come forward and serve in local authorities and elsewhere, how would you respond? Ian?
Well, there's a peace of sorts in Northern Ireland, and it's a bit like the tail wagging the dog. Sinn Féin are holding the British government basically to ransom. We have the leader of Sinn Féin in Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill, who says and maintains that there was no alternative to the IRA campaign of murder and terrorism.
Ian, I always enjoy speaking with you. It's such an important perspective you bring from that part of the United Kingdom. Look after yourself, Ian. Thank you. Talk again soon. Ben's in Brentwood. Your reaction to this would-be councillor in Brum, in Birmingham. Good morning.
Yeah, I reiterate that what that guy just said previously. You know, it's obscene that a man that basically was convicted of committing treason, you know, wanting to bomb an embassy, a British embassy, then how the hell can he ever...
I don't understand it.
You had just done, Nick, and actually you commented and said that, you know, wouldn't it be a breath of fresh air? Then I totally disagree, and I think there's millions...
No. Ajmal Mansour would be a breath of fresh air. Not this guy. I'm sorry, I think you slightly misheard.
That's what I'm talking about. This guy here, he screams to me the typical kind of Imam Muslim person that wants to get in power for one reason only, and that's so that he can serve his own people.
Shahid Butt. Yeah. Well, and I don't think that... I think it's very divisive for people like that
very
to be...
He's a very eloquent, educated man and speaks very well, like a lot of those guys do, right?
Right.
And they charm, and they talk... The way he spoke to you was all very charming. That he was, but they want one thing only, and one thing is that they want to look after their own people in their own community.
Ben, you're wrong. I'm sorry. I'm confused. If you're talking about the man who wants to be a councillor in Birmingham, I'm with you. If you're talking about my friend Ajmal Mansour, you're totally wrong.
Yeah, no, I'll disagree.
Well, I respect that. I respect your position. But you're making allegations about someone who's not here to defend himself. I have to tell you, Ben, the allegations are wrong as well. So I want to apologise to Mr. Mansour. And again, having known him and spoken to him down the years, you couldn't be more wrong about a bloke I know. So, Ben, I respect your position. I wish you a safe day in Brentwood by the M25 in Essex, and we're going to have to part there because let's talk on another matter, because, sir, you are wrong and wholly wrong on this, but look after yourself. Right, I think I dealt with that one. Should we go to the High Street? Nathaniel, are we going to Dover High Street? Good morning.
Oh, Nick, and it's 2,000 metres.
Well done. Are you pasted out this morning, I trust?
I checked it on Google Earth with a little measuring tool.
That's too funny. I haven't been to Dover for a long, long, long time. Go on, what's it like?
It had a shop for 5 years, actually, in Dover High Street. And I've seen firsthand what caused the downfall in my area anyway.
Mm.
There's a few things going on. So Dover High Street did hit its lowest ebb probably 2 years ago, but it's slowly improving again.
Okay.
What started all of it in Dover was when the out-of-town hotel complexes set up.
Right, yeah.
So back in 2016, 2017, just after the Brexit referendum, they decided to actually look at, the council spent £100 million
cool.
on a development adjacent to the high street,
yep.
took the big chains that are in the high street and allowed them to empty their gigantic units in the town. One of them was my neighbour, M&S, who have now been the new unit. You had all of the major brands up sticks from the high street move 200 metres down the road into an out-of-town development. Even these humongous empty units to be filled. Well, you know what it's like, you know, with all of these vape shops, the barbers, yep. the charity shops, yep. the bookies. I think we must be the only town with five Costas in it.
I'm going to finish it because I have to get to the news. Nathaniel, thank you for measuring the high street. Thank you for giving us the background to Dover. And it's a very key point Nathaniel makes, those out-of-towns, which are so useful because guess what? You can park, and it's impossible to park on the high street if you want to pick up your dry cleaning. You can park and there's a range of stores. All right, we might return to the high street, but thanks again, Nathaniel. If you were listening to yesterday's show, you'd have heard my conversation with the Science and Technology Secretary, Liz Kendall, about the government's rollout of free, for all adults, AI training.
But there's a whole range of courses free online, you know, including day-long courses and courses specifically for small businesses, looking at how they can integrate AI into what they do.
But how effective are these courses? Well, there was only one way to find out. As the Prime Minister made no secret of his father's profession, we decided to find one ourselves. LBC Shivani Sharma spent the afternoon with toolmaker Vernon Fold. Now, he's from ARK, Precision Limited, in Chelmsford, and our thanks to them in advance, to see how he got on. Now, remind me, what was Sir Keir's father's job?
My dad was a toolmaker.
My dad was a toolmaker.
My dad, he was a toolmaker.
My dad was a toolmaker.
And your dad, I think it's right to say, was a toolmaker?
He was a toolmaker, yeah.
His dad was a toolmaker. And now the Prime Minister has an AI-shaped tool, which he vows could help upskill 10 million workers across the UK, as outlined by the Digital Secretary, Liz Kendall, on LBC yesterday.
We want AI to work for Britain, and that means we need Britons who can work with AI. And that starts by this huge offer, free online AI courses for all.
Courses range from 20 minutes to several weeks. But how useful is the training for workers cut from the same cloth as the PM's father?
They need to match exactly.
Right.
Because you don't want any plastic getting down in the little gap.
Yeah.
So that had to be put on there.
Vernon Fold is one of the only toolmakers left in Chelmsford. He's been in the business for 20-odd years, and we've taken one of the government's AI training courses together to see how helpful it is for his line of work.
Generative AI's vast potential, current limitations, and why the human role remains essential. Lastly, we'll cover the key skills you'll need to make the most of generative AI tools.
Right, OK, so quick video. How are we feeling so far? Do you think that's going to be of any use for your job?
I can't say that she said anything. She just talked in, I don't know, language that I don't understand.
It's a whole lot of jargon and not a lot of relevance for someone in a hands-on manual job, according to Vernon.
The way I see it, it still needs a human there. It needs a human with a brain to solve a problem. The thing is, with me, having done it so long, I'm pretty sure that everything that I'm doing on that machine is being done the right way. Anyway.
Right, right.
I'm not sure what AI could tell me to do.
Beyond maybe helping him with his emails, Vernon doesn't believe these AI programs, for him at least, will be worth the badge he's won at the end.
If I was to ask you to rate how useful that test was, one being the lowest, 10 being the most useful, for your job and the work you do, what would you give it?
Well, for my job, it'd have to be down a 1 or 2 because it's not going to be of any use to us.
Mm.
I can see it could be more useful for other people, but not for us.
So perhaps not all go with AI. My thanks to Vernon Fold from ARK Precision Limited in Chelmsford, concluding LBC's Shivani Sharma's report. All right, the music means we must move on. And coming up after the news, don't send suspended pupils home, schools are told. But what about the disruption for other children in that particular class? Plus, if you want to talk about punchy headlines, the NHS is worse than Sudan for patients' mortality rate, according to findings. And spend it like Brooklyn Beckham. Partial to a Pomerol, and I'll always get down to a superb Sassicaia, but £75,000 for one particular bottle of red wine. But how does it taste? You'll find out after the you'll find out even after the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
On Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's president in Beijing. The prime minister told Xi Jinping he wants a more sophisticated relationship with his country. The two leaders spoke about visa-free travel, security and trade. There have been concerns about closer ties with Beijing, but Keir says he's always considering national interests.
I know that whatever's going on in the world, the most important thing to the vast majority of people is the cost of living. So opening up access to business, seizing those opportunities, which then gets reflected in better businesses, in jobs, in price reductions at home, really, really matter.
The UK and China are also expected to sign off on a new border security pact. It aims to disrupt the supply of small boat engines and people smuggling gangs. But the former Tory security minister Tom Tugendhat's told Nick the outcome from Sir Keir's visit so far is pretty thin.
The reality is the visas agreement is they've promised to look at it. I mean, sure, okay. And the engine parts, it's not China that's the important bit. It's the trafficking points. And those trafficking points are in Europe and in Turkey. If they're not made in China, they'll be made somewhere else. So I'm afraid what they've done is they've agreed an intelligence sharing operation with an organisation that spends most of its time beating up its own citizens.
More than 12,000 sexual assault allegations have been made in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. Figures exclusively seen by LBC show a 75% increase in reports since 2020. The government says health leaders must take robust action to keep staff and patients safe. Water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of 5.4% from April. That equates to an extra £33 a year for the average household. The latest rise is being earmarked to fix leaking pipes and sewage treatment works. Teachers in England are going to be told to keep more suspended pupils in school rather than send them home. The new guidance aims to cut potential unrestricted access to phones and social media. And Santander has announced it's to close another 44 branches, putting almost 300 jobs at risk. The bank says 96% of all transactions are now being done online. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 60 at 10,214. The pound buys $1.38 and €1.15. LBC weather, lingering fog will clear to leave a mostly cloudy day. Some patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after nine, Thursday, 29th of January. Question, what to do? What to do? What not to do with a broken hearted? What to do with a broken classroom and disrupted pupils? Do you send them home or keep them in school? Interesting new guidance, which I'll share with you in a moment. Plus, in praise of red wine, Brooklyn Beckham, spend it like Brooklyn. £75,000 for one bottle. £80,000, I think, was it 90 for two? Our focus on that first bottle. Has anyone ever tasted Chateau d'Yquem? Chateau d'Yquem. As I said, I like a Sassicaia, I like a Pomerol. I'm very partial to one of those, but never had none of that. And how come it's so expensive? And here's a headline that might cause you health issues. NHS is worse than Sudan for patients' mortality rate. We'll get behind the headline later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Are you a teacher? Your husband or wife a teacher? One of your children a teacher? Teachers? What's it like if you have a disrupted classroom? If you have pupils, some of whom I am the first to accept, some of whom will have issues, I get it. Others, I'm afraid a bit like me, just like sometimes to play the fool and be a bit naughty. So what do we make of guidance that schools will be told to stop sending suspended pupils home under new plans to be put forward by the government? Children in England, I remind you, of course, this is through devolution, so I can't speak of other parts of the United Kingdom. Children in England will no longer be sent home by default when they get into trouble from next year, ending decades of tradition in modern schooling. Were you ever suspended? Were you sent home for the afternoon? Were you sent home for the week? How did Mum and Dad react to that? Now, back to the guidance. Head teachers will be told to discipline disruptive pupils in the classroom under measures that will be unveiled in a forthcoming school's white paper. At home, suspensions will be relegated to only the most serious of cases. Yes, I know what you're thinking, and I'm thinking it too. I don't know what they are. It doesn't say. Ministers are concerned that loosening attitudes towards school sanctions has fueled poor behaviour among pupils. The government now believing many children telling their parents they've been suspended and must stay at home is no longer the punishment of days gone by. So how does keeping them in school make any difference? Well, let's start with Maria Kemble, who's executive head at St Edmund's and St Joseph's Catholic Primary Schools in Suffolk, often helps us with educational matters, and joins me now. I appreciate this is early days, I appreciate it's a white paper, but how does the idea strike you in the early stages? Maria Kemble, good morning.
Morning. I think there isn't a school that doesn't want to keep its pupils in the classroom because they need to be there for learning. No head teacher suspends any child for minor infringements of the behaviour policy. Mm. You know, suspension is a serious matter, and it is for the most serious behaviour, often, you know, aggressive, violent behaviour. So we're not talking about someone who's just not done their homework or something like that. I think I absolutely see where the government's ambition is, and I do support that. I think everybody wants their children to be in school learning, but we also have to think about the resourcing of this. If you have children who are disrupting their own learning as well as others, moving them out of the classroom is important for everybody. But also you need the staff, you need the space to be able to do that. And my concern is that part of the issue hasn't been thought through.
What is the process or procedure for a pupil at your school who is starting to disrupt a class? What are the measures that you or your colleagues take?
We have a number of strategies involved. So we routinely have spaces where children are taken for a bit of a reset. So that might be with a teaching assistant for a short period of time, always assuming we have a spare adult that can do that. Sometimes it's about providing them preempting things and actually having a timetable that supports them through providing other activities for short periods of time to give them a break from the classroom so that actually we preempt them becoming dysregulated and spoiling the learning for everyone else.
What effect does that often have with the pupils?
It's a long-term process, and you don't change behaviour overnight. It's about working with families and with staff, and actually the children actually, you know, do respond. We certainly have children that we've worked with in that way, and, you know, their behaviour now, 2 years down the line, is very different from what it was 2 years ago, and they are in the classroom 95% of the time learning like everybody else. So we know those ways of working do work, but they take time and they take investment of resources, particularly people.
How disruptive can the most disruptive pupil be? I imagine they can hijack the entire class for the entire, possibly, I was going to say the entire lesson, possibly the entire day.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes pupils can become, you know, a risk if they start throwing things or, you know, they pick up objects, they pick up resources, sometimes chairs, and they will, you know, threaten to throw them. And in those situations, we either remove the child, if we can safely, or we remove the rest of the class to another space.
Have you ever had to suspend a pupil, and how difficult a decision is it to make, and what is the procedure?
It's incredibly difficult, and I would say that actually it's something that, you know, I've been a head for 25 years. In the first probably 20 years of my headship, I hadn't suspended any pupils, and it's only very recently that has been something that has happened. It's it's difficult. There, you know, there are various processes to go through. Actually, you know, it is an absolute last resort when every other strategy has failed. And then that is really for the children's safety, for the child themselves, but the other children in their class and the adults who are teaching them.
Maria Kemble, thank you. You're executive head at St Edmunds and St Joseph's Catholic Primary Schools in Suffolk. Listening to that, Sarah Johnson, who's an education consultant, president of PRU-ZAP, a national organisation supporting policy, policy direction for pupil referral units and alternative provisions in England, hence PRU-ZAP, and joins me now. OK, the idea just at the very outset that a suspended pupil should be in school and not be sent home, how do you react? Good morning.
Good morning. To echo what was just said, I think we all want children to remain in school as much as possible, but it's also a resourcing issue. How do we make sure that we're able to staff it and it becomes meaningful rather than dumping children in rooms or corridors without actually working on what the real issues are? If you don't have teaching assistants and teachers really being able to do close work with those children, then really it's just putting them in a place without really considering their needs. Especially when we take into account suspension rates are the highest for children with special educational needs.
I mean, it is sort of, is the expression counterintuitive or whatever, that a pupil who's behaving badly and not really learning in class, I tell you what we're going to do, we're going to send him home for the rest of the week, or her, I'm sorry, we're going to send them home for the rest of the week, well, they definitely won't do any learning. I mean, it's probably not makes the most sense, in all honesty, Sarah.
So it doesn't, but I also appreciate that head teachers take the decision very seriously to suspend children, and it's often when it's disrupting the learning of others in particular. You're more likely to be excluded from school for persistent disruptive behaviour rather than other issues. So this is the bit that really disrupts other children's learning as well, and what you have there is potentially the quieter children not being able to get along with things. Now, that's not me saying I advocate for suspensions at all. I think we have to be really careful about what the role of suspensions are, how it's actually helping children in the long run to get back into the classroom and to be able to engage productively within school. And I think it's also about, if we send children home and they're suspended, then they're not really being exposed to the culture and the norms of the school environment and how we expect them to behave.
Can you give me an idea, Sarah, of the sort of behaviour that could lead to a suspension? You talk about disruption. Is this as in physical disruption, or can it just be being extraordinarily cheeky and difficult in class?
I think it's unlikely that children being cheeky and being a bit of a pain in the class will be suspended. However, I do need to draw attention to some schools may have a lower threshold of what they deem as inappropriate behaviour and might have more what we would call zero tolerance to it. I think those suspensions would be seen as perhaps not being proportionate or fair. I think, generally speaking, the majority of head teachers will be looking at suspensions where it is continual disruption to the learning of the classroom.
I hope you don't mind me asking you, were you a good pupil at school? Were you ever... We used to have something called detentions at my school. I'm sure you'd never even thought of it. And I was never suspended, and I don't think I ever got anywhere near. I'm afraid I did have the odd DT or detention. What about you?
So, it's a great question. And you were asking earlier to your listeners. I was thinking when I was suspended from school. I was suspended from school because I had 6-inch spiky hair, and I was told under no uncertain terms to get back home and to wash my hair out. But my older brother was excluded from school as well. And so I think it's really about what happens thereafter. I think detentions and suspensions might be used as a response, but actually what we want to be looking at is at the data. What are we doing to make sure that children aren't repeatedly suspended from school? And I just want to draw your attention to as well the safeguarding review of Mossbourne Victoria Park, where they would send children out for large portions of time called desking, where they would sit outside the classroom and not engage in learning at all. And that's part of the safeguarding review. And that had a fundamental impact on children's emotional well-being as well, because rather than bringing children back into the classroom, they were continually put outside and not engaging with their learning at all. And we don't want to get into a process where that's being used instead of suspension.
Your hair looks perfect to me now down this video link, so I'm pleased it's all sorted out. Sarah Johnson, thank you. You're an education consultant. You were head of behaviour and inclusion for the London Borough of Redbridge. You're now president of PRU-ZAP. Thank you for your input on that. Calls coming in already. Ruth, you're going to be telling me your particular story. Were you suspended at school? What was your, quote, crime? What impact did it have? And if you've got pupils at school, obviously the disruption, you want them to learn. It's difficult with the class being disrupted. We'll take your calls on that. And a health check of the health service, as it is revealed that the NHS care now is worse than that in the Sudan for patients' mortality rates. It's 9:15, LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's president in Beijing. The border security minister has just told Nick the UK and China are expected to sign off on a new border security pact aimed at disrupting the supply of small boat engines. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average £33 a year from April. LBC weather. Fog gradually clearing to leave a mostly cloudy day. Patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M11 southbound, Junction 7 at Harlow. It's because of an accident where one lane stays closed. On the M25, it's still very busy clockwise at Junction 17 at Maple Cross after an accident. And the M4 slow eastbound onto the elevated section after a van broke down, but that's also been recovered. In Shepherd's Bush, the Uxbridge Road remains closed both ways because of the ongoing investigation. And in East Putney, the South Circular Road is closed both ways because of an ongoing investigation. On the train, southeastern services are delayed by about 45 minutes between Tunbridge and Hastings, and also southeastern trains are disrupted to and from London Bridge following a signal failure.
This is LBC.
The Ford Kuga plug-in hybrid. Stylish, bold, and built for adventure. And now, you could win one. Take a test drive in any Ford Kuga to enter and be in with a chance of winning the Kuga plug-in hybrid. Search Win a Ford Kuga and book online. To enter, take a test drive between the 1st of January and the 28th of February. Ready, set, Ford. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Combine your pensions with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
How to control a classroom where you have disruptive pupils. The government is saying don't send that pupil home for suspension. He, she needs to serve it within the school. Ruth's in Thetford. What's the conversation you're going to have, Ruth? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. So my partner's son, he's 15.
Yep.
He struggles massively in school. Okay. And due to that, it comes out as quite disruptive behaviour.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We do all that we can, but obviously he's a cool 15-year-old now. He knows better than us. So
every 15-year-old thinks they're cool. This is the reality, Ruth.
Yeah. Now, he's been suspended twice before. This is his third suspension. And this time he's been suspended for 6 weeks.
That's half a term, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long... Because it's his third suspension.
I've got to ask, Ruth, what's he done, for goodness sakes?
He brought a vape into the school toilets and was sharing it around with his friends.
Right, okay.
So I understand the school has to do something, but in his eyes, it's a reward. oh, I can just stay at home now for 6 weeks.
What would he do for 6 weeks?
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. So my partner...
Probably vague, I would think.
Probably. My partner works extremely hard. His mum works extremely hard.
Mm.
It has such a knock-on effect on the parents as well. What are we meant to do for 6 weeks?
I think this is shocking, you know, because the lad... Obviously, we've got discipline issues, but no one is going to benefit from him not being in class, right? He's not going to benefit. You're not going to benefit. His father's not going to benefit.
Not in the slightest.
And no one... I mean, it's almost the school abrogating responsibility in a sense, isn't it?
And I think 6 weeks is just ludicrous. It's ludicrous. It's the start of a new year. He's now, at one point, he's going to have to go over to his grandparents in Ireland and stay there for a couple of weeks.
And he won't, I mean, with the greatest respect, I think the brightest child in the world, in the country would struggle to lose 6 weeks of education and play catch-up on the curriculum.
I know. Well, they've sent him home with work to do at home. But how are we meant to sit over his shoulder when we all have full-time jobs?
Well, lastly, you're not trained. You know, the joy of the United Kingdom is we have schools with great people who are prepared to educate the children and are trained. You aren't, unless you're going to tell me differently, you and your partner aren't trained teachers, so it's absurd.
No, not at all. No, not in the slightest. We help, we try our best, but...
Tell you what, my listeners will be hearing... Would you give us a call in a couple of weeks? Do you mind awfully just ringing us? Just let you know. Because I mean, I have nothing but sympathy for the boy. I mean, he shouldn't be behaving like this, of course. It's not justifying his behaviour for a heartbeat. But that is not going to help anybody. Ruth, please give your partner my best wishes. Give your partner's son, I don't know, a bit of a ticking off. And we'll talk in a couple of weeks and see how the lad is getting on. Ruth, thank you. More calls coming in on that. But I mentioned a really stark headline this morning. NHS is worse than Sudan for patients' mortality rate. What's called the Global State of Patient Safety 2025 finds the UK ranked in the bottom third. If it's important to you, 141st out of 205 countries. It's a report from Imperial College London and Patient Safety Watch. It is to be launched by Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, and Sir Jeremy Hunt, of course, the former Conservative Health Secretary, speaking at the House of Lords later today. And Sir Jeremy Hunt joins me now. I've read the headline and I think one other sentence, Sir Jeremy. Can you give us a little more background, a little more detail? And, of course, your reaction, remembering you served as Health Secretary some years ago. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I mean, it's a very stark report. I've always been worried about the number of avoidable deaths in modern healthcare systems. And we know that in the NHS, we have about 13,500 preventable deaths every year. That's a death that wouldn't have happened if people have had the right medical care. And the NHS has made a lot of effort in this area. But we still lag a lot of countries. And, you know, the one that's on most people's minds at the moment is maternity safety. And there's, as you will report many times on your show, issues in Nottingham, in Leeds, Shrewsbury and Telford, have been in the past in Morecambe Bay. And the question is what we do next, because it's partly funding, but actually the country that is the safest in the world in this area is Norway. And they spend a lower proportion of GDP on health than we do. So it isn't just money. And this report looks at all the things that could be done better. But the one I would point to in particular, I think it was a huge mistake in 2004-05 to get rid of doctors having their own patients. GPs used to have a list of patients. They'd have 2,000 patients that were their patients. We scrapped that and said, you're attached to a surgery, but you don't have your own doctor. And that means going to a GP surgery becomes sometimes like going to a call centre. You don't know who you're talking to. They don't know you. And, of course, that's when mistakes get made.
Yeah.
And other healthcare systems don't do that. And I think it was a wrong turn. Wes Streeting says he wants to go back to the old system. I really hope he does.
Well, can I put it to you, and you'll know far better than I, a doctor, he or she gets to know their patients, so they know that Ferrari is a rotten old malinger and there's nothing wrong with him because they've met him six times in the last 3 weeks. But if Hunt walks across the threshold, he must be sick because this man never has a day off. Is that a fair comment, Sir Jeremy?
That's right. He looks at Ferrari's waistline.
I know. Says, I why should I have any sympathy? Now, your chair of patients...
Hunt runs marathons, you know. He's all right, you know.
I know. Your waistline...
Right, but actually, Nick, the serious point here is that it's also... We have, a crisis of morale in the NHS.
Mm.
And if doctors are seeing 40 people in one day, as some GPs do, for a 10-minute appointment, and they don't know them from Adam.
Ridiculous.
It is a much tougher day
than
if they're seeing patients who they mainly know and they know their families anyway. So I think we've got to recognise that it's actually been really bad for doctors as well.
Do you sense Mr. Streeting is minded to make that change, or do you not really have any intel on that, Sir Jeremy?
I don't know the timings. You know, it is a Labour commitment to bring back family doctors. I tried to do it. I should say we do all have a named doctor on our medical records, which I thought was going to do this because I negotiated this with my old foe, the BMA. It turned out to be a complete tick box exercise. Right. I was conned, you know, and everyone does technically have a named GP on their medical record, but nothing has changed on the ground. We need to go back to GPs being actually responsible for their own patients.
You chair Patient Safety Watch, Sir Jeremy. How does that work? How do people get involved in that?
Well, it's a very small charity, and all we do really is commission Imperial College, one of the leading universities in the world, to actually quantify how many lives would be saved. So, for example, on maternity safety, the best in the world is Japan. And we know as a result of this research that if we match Japan's levels of maternity safety, three fewer babies would die every single day in the NHS. And I think that should be a real spur to change.
Staying with the NHS, you're probably not aware, but LBC has a story running today. More than 12,000 reports of alleged sexual assault have been recorded in NHS hospitals across the UK over the past 5 years. Figures obviously that are shocking. Again, a related conversation. Is safeguarding in our hospitals where it needs to be, Sir Jeremy?
Well, it clearly isn't. I wouldn't want to suggest the NHS is particularly worse than other healthcare systems. I'm sure these are problems everywhere, but that doesn't mean we don't need to do something about it. What I would say is that the same problem I was talking about with GPs can also be the case in hospitals, where people are pushed around from department to department, and sometimes it's not clear who's in charge. And I think safeguarding problems get worse when people don't really know who is responsible for individual patients.
And finally, reminding listeners that, of course, you served as Chancellor, so you'll know the importance, the trading value of China, and how important it is as, I think, the second biggest trading bloc in the world. And you also served as Foreign Secretary, and you visited China as Foreign Secretary. Sakir is there now. What does success look like?
Well, I don't have a problem with him going. Xi Jinping is, Donald Trump's leader of the most powerful country in the world, but Xi Jinping is probably the most powerful leader in the world because China isn't a democracy and he has so much absolute power. So I do think Britain has to talk to China, but we need to do so with our eyes open.
What does that mean in political sense?
Well, what China wants more than anything else is to hasten the breakup of the Atlantic relationship, because they know that America's biggest strength is its network of allies. Donald Trump has not handled those allies at all well, as we know. But we just should be very, very cautious, because that's really what China is trying to do. They're trying to turn the charm on to prize us even further away from America. And look, I don't agree with a lot of the things that Donald Trump has done, but in the end, that Atlantic partnership between America and Europe has been very, very important for the world. And we should do what we can to keep it going, even in very strained circumstances.
Finally, as former Chancellor, as you see now, a number of Labour MPs not just banned from their local pubs, they're now being banned from their local coffee shops and their bars and restaurants as a result of some of the measures taken by the current Chancellor. Reaction from that, Sir Jeremy?
Well, I just feel that when it comes to business rates, she needs to recognise that high streets are under massive pressure. A lot of people are doing their shopping online. And this isn't just a sort of pandemic phenomenon. We put in business rates relief during the pandemic. I kept it at 75% because I could see there was a real problem in our high streets. And when our high streets die, I mean, you know, I represent a town called Godalming.
You do?
High Street is the heart of the community. And when the High Street dies, it's really bad for everyone. So I just think there needs to be a big rethink.
Not just Godalming. Let's not forget Ash as well. Thank you very much. Thanks to Jeremy Hunt, Conservative MP for Godalming and Ash, former Health Secretary, talking about that and part of this report that's being launched, I should say, report being launched by Imperial College London, a patient safety watch in the House of Lords. Jeremy, thanks for your time for that. Louise, I want to talk to you about school behaviour. Let's do it the other side of the news. Ruth, if you're still listening, you told us about your partner's son. This has come in from Neem. Ruth, I do hope you're listening. She needs to know the following. If a child is suspended for more than five consecutive school days, the school has a legal duty to arrange suitable full-time education from the sixth school day. For permanent exclusions, the local authority must arrange this from the sixth day. So, sending work for him to complete does not fulfil this legal requirement. Ruth, I hope you're listening to that, because I must say, when I heard 6 weeks, I thought that was extraordinary. And Neem has come in with that. So I would suggest there's a conversation to be had between your partner and your partner's son's school that they need to step up to the plate here, having taken that rather draconian action. All right, Louise, we'll talk school behaviour after this, and also spend it like Brooklyn Beckham.
In the corner, crying, I say, a little old wine drinker me.
I don't know about little old wine drinker. £80,000 for two bottles of Plonk, but what do they taste like? We'll tell you more after this. 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's held talks in Beijing with China's President Xi, calling for a move, a more sophisticated relationship with the country. The Prime Minister says progress has been made on issues including tariffs on whisky and visa-free travel to China. Water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of 5.4% from April. That equates to an extra £33 a year for the average household. And schools in England are going to be told not to automatically send pupils home when they're suspended for bad behaviour. Ministers say the move aims to cut unrestricted access to phones and social media. LBC weather: lingering fog will clear to leave a mostly cloudy day. Patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland. A high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
I'm Natasha. I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
What's the most you've ever spent on a bottle of wine? I mean, we've all splashed out on a Sassicaia or plonked out on a Pomerol, but wow, 80,000 for two bottles of wine, 75 for one of them. We'll talk to wine expert Jasper Corbett in just a moment. But Louise is in Haywards Heath, been hanging on the line to talk school behaviour. Louise, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, interesting show. My daughter is year 11, so she's just about to sit GCSE. She's currently sitting mock exams, the fourth lot of mocks, and was suspended last week for a day and a half for not wearing her blazer.
Right. Had she taken it to school with her, or had she forgotten
it? She takes it to school. I think it's, you know, part of the uniform policy, so I'm not saying she was in the right, but there's the groups of children do not like wearing these blazers. And it was a break time, so she didn't have a blazer on. She had it in her bag.
But that's what children were put on Earth to do, of course, to break the rules. We know that. We were both children once.
And I mean, it's her suspension grounds when I got the phone call. So I'd had no prior communication from the school to say that she was continuously breaking this rule, as the rest of her peer group does. Mm-hmm. And I got a phone call just to say she's been suspended. I said, on what grounds? And they said persistent disruptive behaviour.
Let's just use her first name. Let's just call her Sophie for safety's sake. You know, Sophie, if you do this again, you will be suspended. Was there that level of warning or not?
No.
That seems a bit harsh. What do you think?
Oh, it's absolutely ludicrous. It's a blaze. I mean, I'm not saying she should follow the rules, as they all should, but she was told twice in one day by the headmistress to put her blazer on. Mm. Now, my daughter questioned this and said, I will put this on, but what about the group I'm with? And she said, I'm not talking to them, I'm talking to you. And then subsequently saw her without her blazer again, and that tipped her over the edge.
How did your daughter react?
She was upset because she struggles at school anyway. Oh, she finds it quite overwhelming.
Right, okay. Sorry, how old is she again? Remind me?
She's 16, actually. She's 16.
That's such a key age, isn't it?
Yeah, and she struggles, and, I mean, she's not got any SEN needs. She's dyslexic, and there's been no provision by the school.
A reality check. And I know your mum, I know you're the mum, but broadly, is she a good kid or is she a bit naughty?
No, she's a good kid. She's a good kid. She's got a lot to say for herself at times, which doesn't do her any favours. But she's a good kid, and she's not defiant. To be suspended for a day and a half is...
We're having this conversation because later, I don't know if it's this month or next, the government is going to issue this white paper that will say that children, such as your daughter, should actually be dealt with within the class or within the
100%.
School. How do you react to what the government's proposing, Louise?
Yeah, I think it depends on the severity of the behaviour. I mean, in my daughter's instance, sending her home for a day and a half over not wearing a blazer that's just something that should be dealt with in school.
Did they give her work to do?
No work to do.
All right, give her my best wishes and for her school career. I appreciate she perhaps finds it at times a little bit overwhelming. Louise, thank you. We'll have more calls on this in a moment. But to a story that we've been trailing throughout the course of the show, and I have to say one that probably prompted as much conversation as any other this morning when I sat down with what's laughingly known as the team. This is Brooklyn Beckham, yes, in the headlines again, but this time, no, not for family problems, rather for his choice of wine, totalling 90,000... We'd get different reports here, but I'm going with this one from The Sun. Always tell the truth. 90,000 bottles of... 90,000 pounds worth of two bottles of wine. 70,000 pounds, it says here, for one bottle of Chateau Dequem, if I'm saying that correctly, and 15,000 for another. But is it worth it? One of the wines dates back... Is that right? To 1800s. Right. Jasper Corbett, wine connoisseur, broadcaster with Compass Wines Limited. Someone I used to do a lot of TV with many years ago joins me now. Jasper, first, am I pronouncing it correctly? Second, what can you tell us about these drops? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yep, you're spot on. It's Chateau Yquem. It's got a D, a little D in there with an apostrophe and then Yquem. Chateau Yquem. And it's from Sauternes in the southern half of Bordeaux. It's a sweet white wine. And simply fantastic as well, but does fetch high prices, but it ages magnificently.
What makes it so special, Jasper?
There are about 60,000-70,000 bottles made a year. Any wine connoisseur will want to have some of this in their cellar. It's something you drink at the end of dinner with your pudding.
Yeah,
So you don't get rid of a lot of it. So it does hang around for a long time.
So you have it with your sticky toffee pudding. Then clearly that's the idea, is it?
Heavenly, wouldn't that be heavenly? That'd be great. That would be great. And 1811 is also one of it's a funny year. It's a comet year. So wines that were made in that year sort of have a little bit of notoriety attached to them as well.
What year did you say comet?
A comet year.
What do you mean as in there was a comet in that year?
There was a comet. So it has a little bit of a catch on that as well.
Right.
I must admit, I did, like a lot of other people, probably have a little snoop around the internet and saw that a bottle did sell about 20 years ago for 70 grand. at an auction in London. So it may be quite a good purchase, if you know what I mean.
Well, you deal in wines, fine wines, all day long at Compass Wines. There you are. You've had your second and last name check. How often do you ship bottles of Chateau d'Yquem?
Well, two bottles of the 1983, I should put the 19 in this, right? 1983 vintage sold at Christmas. Okay. We don't sell a lot of it, but they were £345 each.
Right.
So there's a bit of investment inflation in there, isn't there? I mean, you could really do quite well with that.
Finally, and it shows my utter ignorance, and that's why I turn to you as an expert, if someone had asked me what wines will carry the most expensive price tag on the planet, I would have gone for reds. Are there reds that can outshoot this sweet white, or is this about as high as we can get?
Yeah, well, there is a red that really does hit the big stuff, which is a Burgundy, and it's called Romani Conti from the Domaine de la Romani Conti. And we see bottles of that sort of, you know, shifting around 150, 250, and then £1,000 a bottle. And then one went for just over 400,000 in September last year.
£400,000 for a bottle of wine?
£400,000 bottle of wine. Good, isn't it?
And last question. Right, so he's paid, what has he paid? 75,000. I mean, is it much? So, I mean, if I go to a restaurant, you know, I might spend in the hundreds, but I'm not going to spend in the thousands. Is the taste markedly different? Is it worth the extra 74,500 quid?
A bottle of Yquem is a really special thing.
Is it?
So whether 1811, is it still drinkable? I don't know. But it would be quite fun to find out. So next time you've got a dinner invitation, you know, include me, Nick, and I'll join you in it.
If you bring the wine, that's even a possibility. Jasper Corbett, thank you very much. Broadcaster, wine connoisseur. All right, one last one. Compass Wines is where you will find it. Let's talk wine. Thanks, Jasper. Let's talk wine with Ian in Fetcham. Ian, you are or were a restaurateur, is that right? Morning.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, we used to have a restaurant in Exeter in about 82, 84. I've had lots of restaurants, but this was one we had then.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple of customers. Son used to bring his mum there, and they had a bottle of Petrus, and then they had a bottle of Yquem after that.
What would the Petrus have come in then, Ian, price-wise?
The bill was about 1,500 quid then, in about 82, 84, oh, something God. Like that.
Right.
They had caviar and stuff like that. But I mean, the food was about £175 because of the whole bill. And they had this Yquem, and the lady, you know, the elderly lady sort of said, oh, it's a bit too sweet for this, for me. This, can you put a bit of lemonade in it,
oh,
please?
No.
True story. Oh, yeah.
When you've got restaurants, how do you work out how much of that kind of wine? Because obviously you've got to spend, I know you could sell it, obviously you have some money on, but how do you rationalise having some of those bottles in your cellar if you possibly don't sell them year to year to year?
No, I had a really, really good sort of relationship with the wine merchant that I used to use. I used him for years, and we used to do sale or return.
I'd
have about six bottles like that of different types and some good champagnes, and then if we didn't sell them within 2 months, we'd give them back and do it that way.
Okay.
So it works.
You're still in the restaurant game?
No. I believe it. I think I saw the writing on the wall. I saw there was no money in it anymore, so I went into cafes.
Are you in cafes now?
Yeah, I had quite a few, but now I've just got the one, and we run it under the VAT limit and all the rest of it, because I just don't see how you can make any money employing staff anymore, to be quite truthful with you.
Lastly, do you have some, in the first hour we were talking about people now who are, much as Labour MPs have been banned from pubs, they're going to be banned from coffee shops, cafes, bars. What level of sympathy do you have for that?
I have sympathy, but I personally wouldn't ban them. I'd like them to come in and show them the figures that we're doing and how much we're making out of it. I think maybe that's another way of going.
Do you want to mention your cafe? It's up to you. You don't have to.
Yes, it's Layla's in Effingham.
Layla's
in Effingham, sorry.
Layla's in Effingham. Okay, anyone in that area? Go around and have a nice latte. Ian, thank you for that story. 1,500 quid, and that was in 1983. Henry's in Glasgow to talk school behaviour. Henry, should a child who's disruptive be at home or at school?
I think school. What I wanted to do was to call in and give the voice and perspective of now 40 years old, but when I was a child, I was regularly suspended from school, and I spent most of my high school sat in a corridor on my own, which I don't think is beneficial.
What sort of behaviour did you do? What were you up to?
So I was the class clown. Mm. I wanted to make everyone laugh. But what people didn't realise, and what certainly the teachers certainly didn't realise, was that behind that want for affection and that want to make everyone laugh was at home. I was enduring domestic abuse. and I had family members who were alcoholics. But
sorry,
one stage,
sorry, did you say your parents were alcoholics?
Certainly one of them was. My mother was an alcoholic.
So
and as a child, I had to watch things like my mother stab my father. And I was then going to school and hiding that through being a class clown. So what happened to me was I was suspended quite regularly, and the attitude of the teachers were that they couldn't be bothered with me. I was told I would amount to nothing and I shouldn't waste my time for further education.
I'm so sorry. So, if I might ask, what have you done with your life?
I actually went on in the ambulance service and I became a station commander.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's an incredibly important job. Did no teacher ever relate to the fact that this lad's clearly got problems? I wonder what's happening at home.
Now, I have the needs of two teachers who took the time to put me aside and ask me how I was.
Yeah.
I remember a teacher giving me a hug. Now, whether believe that's appropriate or inappropriate in this day and age, that hug meant the world to me.
Did it? Oh, dear. How old were you when the teacher hugged you, mate?
Sorry?
How old would you have been when that teacher hugged you?
I would have been around the age of 13 or 14.
Oh, such a key age for a lad. Such a key age. So, lastly, government initiative, pupils to stay in the school. Probably you would say yes, because the school needs to work harder to find out what it is that's causing the problem in the first place.
Absolutely. Now, don't get me wrong, if a bit of time out is required, of course, maybe it's the case, let's go home today, take a deep breath and come back tomorrow. But there certainly needs to be support. And what I'd like to say to any children that are out there just now who may be told that they'll amount to nothing or that they're productive or they're a class clown, you put your mind to it and you will achieve whatever you need to achieve.
As you have. Running those ambulances, such a key service. Look after yourself, Bishop. Best wishes. Thank you for sharing so much. The 9:45 LBC News headlines are next.
Sir Keir Starmer's held talks in Beijing with China's president, calling for a more sophisticated relationship with the country. The average water bill in England and Wales will rise by around £33 a year from April. And the government is to instruct schools in England not to automatically send children home if they've been suspended. LBC weather, lingering fog will clear to leave a mostly cloudy day, patchy rain and hill snow for northeast Scotland, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays continue on the M11 southbound to Junction 7 at Harlow. There's been an accident and one lane is closed. The M4's very slow eastbound onto the elevated section off that van broke down earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. In Shepherd's Bush, the Uxbridge Road remains closed both ways because of the ongoing investigation. There are lengthy delays in the area, especially on the Gold Hawk Road. In East Putney, the Upper Richmond Road, which is part of the South Circular Road, is closed both ways, and that's also because of an ongoing investigation. On the train, Southeastern are now delayed by about half an hour between Tunbridge and Hastings. There are minor delays on the Windrush line, that's part of London Overground, between Sydenham and West Croydon.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
If Donald Trump is on the path to fascism, then the Iranian regime is already there and then some. So can the first guy tackle the second problem? Oh, and Mystery Hour.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal.
Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay bi-monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear all change please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so
good.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's refreshing, I hope, having talked about the potential of a war in Iran, the problems in our classrooms and other issues, problems at our health service as well, actually. We'll just take a little detour and go back down the world of wine. Sean's in Launceston, if I'm saying that correctly. Is it Launceston or Launceston? No, it is Launceston, isn't it? Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Nick. Indeed, so it is Launceston, indeed.
Are you a wine connoisseur?
Not particularly, no. But however, I put a caveat.
Go on.
I've just retired. I retired from the Middle East 12 months ago now.
What were you in?
Aviation.
Right, okay.
Fantastic job. Loved every second.
Were you a pilot?
No, avionics specialist.
Oh, wow.
Avionics. And when I sort of got my leaving due, organised a little bit of a party. I found a bottle of Chateau Mouton Rothschild 2014. It was just shy of £1,000.
Right.
And
okay.
It was absolutely exquisite, Nick. It was the most beautiful taste of any liquid I've ever had. It was stunning.
So, come on, I know it's difficult, and I know people make a lot, but was it quite fruity? Was it quite strong? Was it quite oaky? Was it... How?
It was fruity. It was
a nice fruity one.
And the real reason, that's not strictly true, one of the reasons I chose it was I wanted all my friends that were with me, close friends.
Yeah.
We got one of these special pens that you can write on glass.
Oh yes,
and
yes, I've
heard this,
yes.
We all signed the bottle as a memento of my leaving the Middle East.
Oh, what a great idea!
So it's on my sideboard now, all signed up, dated. Dated the 3rd of January 2025.
You know, I've kept the bottle of champagne when both my sons announced that they were getting married. I kept a bottle of champagne when I... Of course I should have got one of those pens, and you write what it was for, because I can never remember what the damn things are for. That's a brilliant idea.
And in a photo frame next to it, I've got a rather precious photograph of a group of us holding our glasses and drinking to my health.
What tremendous, tremendous memories. Lastly, noting that you know a glass of wine, was the... Say you would normally go 80, 90 quid or whatever in a restaurant. You've gone a grand on this one. Was it noticeably different, the taste?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, most definitely, Nick. It was, as I said previously, it was just head and shoulders above anything. It was absolutely stunning.
And you can always... Why didn't I think of that for my sons? What an idiot. Such a good idea. I'm going to go and get one of those pens today. Sean, look after yourself. Thank you, sir. Look forward to speaking to you about other matters. Enjoy your retirement. Should we get back into the classroom? Because that's where disruptive pupils are meant to be. If they're suspended, they suspend, or the suspension is somehow played out within the school. Michael's in Portsmouth. Were you a naughty boy?
I certainly was. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How naughty was naughty?
Well, first of all, I was brought up, mate. I was brought up on whistling chips. The Beano, the comics, and you read them, and you know yourself, reading the comics, all of it is like playing around, being naughty, being a kid.
Yeah.
And the other thing being was actually the TV programmes then. Do you remember, like, Police Sir?
Police Sir, I remember very well. John Alderson, yep, remember
John
very
Alderson
well.
John Alderson and Potter and then all the rest of them.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, them days, but the teachers were sort of like a figure of fun. I mean, the other one was Centurions and that. I mean, I was a dab hand with a pea shooter and the old biro pen.
Okay, what was the...
Used to chew up the old white paper and used to pepper the old board.
The blotting paper. Yeah. Do you remember the blotting paper as well? The blue blotting paper.
Yeah, I certainly do, mate. But then days, that was back in the 60s and 70s and that. But then days, we used to get the cane and the slipper. Mm. And it never done me any harm, to be honest with you.
I know, but not every kiddie is as robust. I'm not saying you're wrong, Michael. And by the way, I think you probably did deserve the slipper, but we can't say every child should have that, because they're not as robust. Not everyone is as robust as Michael Porter.
Yeah,
right, so you're a bad out of school. Come on, I want to know what happened to you when you got out of school. I hope you're in work. I hope you've had a successful career. What would you say?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. It is like I left school. And I worked down a fairground for a while, and then I was a bit of a naughty lad. And then what happened then was like I joined the British Army.
Oh,
yeah, I joined the British Army.
How old?
So again, sorry.
How
Nick.
Old were you, sir, when you joined the Army?
I was 19.
Right,
I had to join up. I mean, what it was, my older brother, he was in the Army, and he used to come home with the money. And I needed, I'll be honest with you, I needed discipline by then. And it was either that or end up inside or something.
Really?
So I joined the British Army
and
went down to the Falkland Islands, but that was just after the war. Ended up in Germany. And I'll tell you what, I actually ended up, in the end, people might be listening to this, I don't know, they probably remember me. But I ended up on Network Rail as a trainer assessor. There you go. So
okay.
I didn't do too bad out of life, mate.
How many years in the military?
I've done 5 years in the military.
Is that what you needed for a kick up the rear end, give you discipline, and that allowed you to go on and hold quite a senior post in the railway? Is it fair to say?
I think you're right, my old friend. I think you're right on that one, yes.
All right. Look after yourself, Michael. Thank you. Well done. A minute for Selena in Enfield. You think it's right that schools keep the pupils in. Why, Selena? Good morning.
Hello. My daughter was actually suspended last year, and I'm really keen to see what this new policy review will show, because I actually, you know, think that misuse of suspensions is being used. It is supposed to be used for disruptive behaviour.
Yep.
And, for example, my child was not disruptive. You know, she was suspended for 3 days. I'd asked for home learning to be done, and that was inadequate. There was barely any learning. She was given repeated lessons. And I reached out to the school saying, you know, I don't approve of this suspension. You've given it, and you haven't given any work. And I got nothing. Till today, I got no response from the head teacher or anybody.
And that's why you agree that this is obviously a better way to go, in a sentence, Selena, that the child...
Definitely. I tried challenging it. It never worked. The child that should have been suspended for the disruptive behaviour wasn't this.
Well, this is often the way. So, you know, you had the minute. I'm sorry, it's only I can give an apology to David, to George, to Tony and others. We're done for another day. The talking, of course, continues with James O'Brien. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on Free Global Player app or the LBC app. You can stay up to date with the latest news and opinions. Put your news category in the order that you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James, as I say, is the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. It's important, I suppose, early doors, to clarify the crucial distinction between an ally and an enemy. When an ally is embarked upon courses that you find at best questionable, at worst corrupt, then obviously you're going to pay more attention to it than you are if an enemy is embarked upon a course that you would expect an enemy but not an ally to be embarked upon. It's extraordinary that needs explaining, but apparently it does. Nonetheless, Iran is all of the things that critics of Donald Trump fear the United States could become under a fascist leader, and then some. It is an absolutely hideous regime. So, could Trump be the person to fight it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer says he's had a productive meeting with China's president in Beijing. The Prime Minister says he's told Xi Jinping he wants a more sophisticated relationship with his country. Critics have raised concerns about China's human rights record and espionage record. Former senior Tory cabinet minister Sir Jeremy Hunt has told LBC Keir needs to proceed with extreme caution.
What China wants more than anything else is to hasten the breakup of the Atlantic relationship. They know that America's biggest strength is its network of allies. Donald Trump has not handled those allies at all well, as we know. That's really what China is trying to do. They're trying to turn the charm on, prize us even further away from America.
More than 12,000 reports of sexual assault have been recorded in NHS hospitals over the past 5 years. Figures exclusively shared with LBC show a 75% increase in allegations since 2020. Charlotte Mensah is a sickle cell patient who was assaulted by a cleaner. She's spoken to LBC after waiving her right to anonymity.
It made me so depressed, and I saw a psychiatrist, a legal psychiatrist who worked with my solicitors, and they diagnosed me with depression, anxiety and PTSD because I was sexually assaulted by that cleaner.
The government says healthcare leaders must take robust action to keep staff and patients safe. There's more on this story on the LBC app. A leading backer of the assisted dying bill has warned it may never be enshrined in law if the House of Lords keeps delaying its progress. Lord Falconer says it needs to be approved in the current parliamentary session or risk ultimately failing. 1,000 amendments have been put forward, with opponents insisting it needs proper scrutiny. The government is to instruct schools in England not to automatically send children home if they've been suspended. The Education Secretary has warned people who spend too much time away from the classroom are at risk of the harms of social media. And water bills across England and Wales will rise by an average of £33 a year from April. The 5.4% increase is 2 percentage points above inflation. Water companies say the increase is needed to fund major investment in crumbling infrastructure. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 54 at 10,208. The pound buys $1.38 and €1.15. LBC weather, lingering fog will clear to leave a mostly cloudy day. Some patchy rain and hill snow for the northeast of Scotland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. I hope you're well. I really do. It's probably a German word for this as well, isn't it? I caught myself feeling a bit guilty on the way into the studio this morning about how fascinating I find the question that I am going to ask you. Is that weird? Guilty because the stakes are so high. We are discussing tens of thousands of deaths already. We're discussing hideousness on a scale that is... Well, it's not unprecedented or unthinkable, but given that this has been the week in which we commemorated Holocaust Memorial Day, the actions of the Iranian regime remind us that, in some ways, the world does forget what that level of state-sanctioned murder and violence can look like. And I make no apology on this programme for dedicating an awful lot of attention to fears that the United States could potentially be teetering on the edge of a decline into similar territory. Certainly murdering protesters on the streets is a line that should never be breached, but you can't pretend. I don't think that murdering 2 or even 10 is the same as murdering 10,000. And that leads us into really weird territory. And by weird, I mean really interesting. And that is why I feel a little bit guilty about how interesting I find it. Because, well, you know why, I've explained. We don't need to dwell unduly on that. But sometimes I like to get stuff off my chest before we dive into the topic. So most front pages to that. And let's just tick a few boxes, shall we? Hands up if you think it is absolutely ridiculous to worry that Donald Trump would happily start World War III if it was going to distract attention from anything from the ICE operatives who were murdering and Border Patrol operatives who were murdering citizens on the streets of Minneapolis right through to the Epstein files, 2 million pages of which are yet, despite his promises and indeed the demands made of the Department of Justice, that are yet to be released. What do you think Donald Trump wouldn't do to stop proper scrutiny of his goon squad and or the release of the Epstein files? Hands up if you think he would balk at the idea of war. Maybe not world war, it's a slightly overused phrase, but would he actually start a war to distract attention from his own moral depravity? Yes or no? Come on, there must be one person who thinks Donald Trump wouldn't start a war to distract attention from his own moral depravity and murderous regime. No, apparently not. So that is point number one. We are doing that thing that we don't know how not to do. Don't talk about the thing that he's announcing just to distract attention from the thing that he was doing yesterday, to distract attention from the thing that he was doing on Tuesday. I'm not even exaggerating this week, am I? But if it is the potential attack on a Middle Eastern power a Middle Eastern power with nuclear ambitions, then you can't ignore it. This is the stuff that's so frustrating. Oh, you're fully... Oh, it's just a dead cat, James. I don't know why you're talking about this. I mean, crikey, he just doesn't want you to talk... I'm not having a go at you for sending me these messages. I did at the beginning of last week, but I've changed my mind about that now. It's a perfectly reasonable response. But you can't not do it. Do you see what I mean? You possibly could not talk about some publicity stunt that he's undertaken. Maybe don't talk about knocking down the West Wing, or the East Wing, sorry, in order to distract attention from Epstein. But you can't not talk about him launching an armada that is currently heading towards Iran, moving quickly towards the country with what he has described as great power, enthusiasm and purpose. So it doesn't matter how enormous a dead cat it may be, there is a level of enormity that cannot be ignored. However clever you think you are, however brilliant, however fearful you might be of what this represents and what this means, you can't ignore it. Of course you can't ignore it. It's potentially war. Hopefully Iran will quickly come to the table. Why does he put this stuff in quotes? It's mystery hour later. Why does he put half of this stuff in capital letters and the rest of it in quotes? I truly have no idea at all. Hopefully Iran will quickly come to the table and negotiate a fair and equitable deal. No nuclear weapons in capital letters. Excuse me, I've got a bit of a tickle in my throat. I'm old enough to remember when he was doing a lap of honour for having eradicated all of Iran's nuclear capabilities for generations. Or did I dream that? Did I dream the bit where Donald Trump launched a military attack upon Iran's nuclear facilities and claimed that they'd been absolutely annihilated? So why on earth would they need to come to the table and do a fair and equitable deal that would remove all nuclear weapons from their arsenal? Time is running out, he writes. It is truly of the essence. As I once told Iran before, make a deal in capital letters. They didn't, and there was, quotes, Operation Midnight Hammer. There you go, I didn't dream it. A major destruction of Iran. But apparently not as destructive as he originally claimed, because he also writes the next attack will be far worse. Don't make that happen again. So, I mean, crikey, this has happened quickly, hasn't it?